Tom.
It's everything a man could want. Women, motorcycles, sports, beer, and me! Hey guys, Tom May from Revenge of the Telemarketers, and I am hosting 101 WRIF's 4th Annual Motor City Men's Expo, Saturday, April 2nd from 11 till 6 at the Novi Expo Center, sponsored by Dodge.
Join the Rips, Drew, and Mike broadcasting live. Meet Kip and Pedro from Napoleon Dynamite.
Your mom goes to college.
Brought to you by the mortgage experts at Rock Financial, Red Wings' Darian Hatcher and Darren McCarty, along with Grinder, plus Detroit Lion Kevin Jones. Meet Playboy Playmates Kimberly Holland and Pilar Lastra.
Check out Sweet Rise, bikes, electronic sports, music, entertainment, and so much more, dude. Register to win over $10,000 in prizes. And check out the bikini contest or tip back a cold one at the Miller Lite Sports Lounge.
The 2005 Motor City Men's Expo. Saturday, April 2nd at the Novi Expo Center. Admission is just $7. Click on WRAF.com for a special discount admission coupon. Sponsored by Dodge. Grab life by the horns. Motor City Golf Warehouse. Motor City Harley Davidson. Napa Auto Parts. Miller Lite. And 101 WRIF.
Poker enthusiasts. MDA hosts their first annual Texas Hold'em Tournament. Call 586-274-9000 to secure your seat at the Men's Expo.
Panchero's Mexican Grill. Get yourself some. That's the sound of fresh dough being pressed into homemade tortillas. Panchero's builds your burrito by filling the homemade tortilla with fresh ingredients right before your eyes. Your choice of steak, spiced pork, chicken, or freshly grilled marinated vegetables. Add vegetarian beans, rice, Panchero's award-winning salsas, and fresh guacamole. Now that's a burrito. Fresh, delicious, and bursting with flavor. So grab the family or friends and get yourself some. Burritos made fresh at Panchero's Mexican Grill. Panchero's, it's good. Panchero's, it's fresh. Panchero's, it's for you. Get yourself some.
Come taste for yourself at the newest Panchero's location in Livonia at 6 Mile Road in Hagerty.
You've searched today like every other day for those annoying reading glasses. Now you don't have to, as Dr. Combati and the Lake Laser Eye Center have a brand new procedure for you called CK to throw away those reading glasses. It's a safe, simple, 5-minute procedure for only $10.99 or $33 per eye per month. Just log on to www.ucmore.com or call 1-877-UC-MORE. That's 1-877, the letters U-S-E-E-M-O-R-E, to get rid of those annoying reading glasses.
Tired of low-priced LASIK ads that promise a great price only to find out that it actually quadruples when you go there? Well, you'll never have that experience with Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center. You get the latest technology and the most personalized care from Dr. Combati.
Hockey may still be on hold, but great music rocks on. Miller Lite and WRAF presents VIP show number 4 with 3 Days Grace, Shinedown, and Cedar, April 28th at the Masonic. The only way to get in is to win, so listen for your chance to walk in free. Once again, it's VIP show number 4 with 3 Days Grace, Shinedown, and Cedar, April 28th at the Masonic. Brought to you by Miller Lite, great taste, less filling, good call, and where else but 101 WRIF The Riff.
You're listening to the award-winning Night Call, The Riff's phone-in talk show on 101 WRIF Detroit. Now, here's the host of Night Call, Peter Werby.
All right, thank you very much. Welcome, everybody. Wow, what a week, huh? A lot of death. Well, that's not a very cheery way to start a program, isn't it? Is it? Well, I gave it away, isn't it? No, it isn't. But still, a lot of issues to talk about, sort of leftovers of the Shivo situation. Certainly, it has been eclipsed by the death of the Pope. But here's how you can join the show. 313-298-WRIF. 313-298-WRIF is the phone number here at the WRIF studios in Detroit, Michigan. And I emphasize all of that because this is beginning to overwhelm me. I mean, this show is becoming truly national and international. So welcome to all of you listening on the internet at WRIF.com or radiopower.org. And if you ever have any problems about figuring out how to listen to this show wherever you are and a lot of my other broadcasts and rebroadcasts and archives, go to peterwerby.com. Last name is spelled W-E-R-B-E.com, so it's peterwerby.com. Also, and I think, a lot of good piece of information there, often things that inform the show. In other words, I read that and I go, wow, and I put it on the website and then we talk about it as well. Tonight, our producer, like most nights, most Sunday nights, Jay Hudson, just fresh off of Motor City Riffs, if you're lucky enough to hear that. Of course, that streams, too. You can hear that as well. If you'd like to email us, calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Calltalkyes@yahoo.com. I don't know. You know my voice. I am getting to that Godfather thing. I don't know what it is. I think it's just this damn endless winter in Detroit. Actually, it was a pretty nice day today, but the day before, I guess maybe it didn't snow. It was supposed to. We have a chat room available as well. That means if you're listening to the program and you want to talk about it with other listeners, you can go to TomHartmann.com, TomHartmann.com, and go to his chat room. You got to register and all this stuff. But Tom lets us use it. Tom's a nationally syndicated talk show host, an old colleague of mine, and he's glad to have us do that. Lots of things coming up, some of the stuff I'm going to be at as well. The world mourning Pope John Paul today. Many leaders hailing him as a torchbearer for peace, a bridge builder between faiths, and a force in the fall of the Iron Curtain. George Bush said the world has lost a champion of human freedom. But then he went on to say, we're grateful to God for sending such a man, a hero for the ages. Bush, it says here in the Reuters account, who went to war in Iraq despite the Pope's opposition. But as a Christian, shared many views with him. Not the idea that there is no basis for the invasion of Iraq, and didn't listen to this man who he praised. We'll talk maybe a little about this report that came out about the weapons of mass destruction. Remember those old things? You know, there's a war going on now, and people over there getting killed, being killed, and there was this big assault by as many as 40 to 60 insurgents on the Abu Ghraib prison. One of the sites of extraordinary American disgrace. So that's where all those tortures took place. And 44 Americans were wounded. Not even clear. In fact, the insurgents say there was a battle raging for hours. It's not even quite clear what's going on there. But let's talk a little about the remnants of the Schiavo case. I don't have anything to say about the Pope. People pass, yeah, and whatever. Okay. 313-298-WRIF. I don't mean to make light of it. I certainly wasn't implying that, but it's all been said, isn't it? Terry Schiavo's body was cremated on Saturday as disagreements continue between her husband and her parents, who are unable to have their own independent expert observe the autopsy. And here is maybe the key to it all in this whole affair. Terry Schiavo cremated amid family feud. Terry Schiavo cremated amid family feud. And it goes on, the cremation was carried out according to a court order establishing that Michael Schiavo had the right to make such decisions. He said plans for burying her ashes in Pennsylvania, where she grew up, has not been completed. Terry Schiavo's parents, Bob and Mary Schindler, had wanted to bury their daughter in Pinellas County so they could visit her grave. Now, it's the key to this all is in this family feud, and obviously it was. And since we've been, how would you say, exposed to the internal workings of this tragedy in this family, most people have an opinion. By the way, if you're ringing right now, please keep ringing 313-298-WRIF, and Jay Hudson will pick it up as soon as he deals with the other call. So just a little patience. And a lot of people have opinions. Some people have no opinions in terms of what should or should not have happened. I'm not sure whether most people do or don't. I did a little till I started thinking that it was none of my business. Absolutely none of my business. It is this family feud, and this is not very unique. This goes on frequently, families at this terrible point in a family's existence where, you know, what should we do about an ailing or dying relative? And is this time to end the technological support of the life of someone? But it's none of our business. And that's what these crazed right-wing fanatics, these right-wing Christians, these absolutely opportunistic and cynical conservative politicians that have just leapt upon this. This is from consortiumnews.com, just the first paragraph. The media frenzy, and what else is it, I mean, why do we know the internal workings of all of this? This happens all the time, what happened to the Shaivo Schindlers. This happens all the time. I mean, people die, but also there's also disagreements. But the media frenzy surrounding the Terri Schiavo case is new evidence of the American right's ability to dominate national news cycles, a power that has become possibly the most intimidating force in modern U.S. politics. These people represent such a small portion of our population, yet they are able to force their agenda down our throats. I should have played that. Remember the George Carlin piece, Ten Commandments? And he had it kind of down to, like, what was it, two commandments. And he says, the final one, though, he said, yeah, thou shalt not shove thy religion down other people's throats. But these people, these arrogant, I don't even know what to call them, fanatics, think that they have the right to intrude not only in the lives of a private personal family, to use this all for their personal political advantage, but to demand that the rest of us enter their private space as well. I mean, they have no, you know, they're always talking about get the government off our backs. No one believes that anymore, do they, that they actually care about that? They are always in other people's business, in other people's private lives, trying to determine what, you know, their twisted concept of morality. And they're such a pack of hypocrites, right? Talking about, and so many of you think, oh, this, remember there was a while after the Bush election that this was Jesus land and that everybody was this right-wing Christian conservative. Well, I was just looking at these statistics. They think maybe as few as 25% of the American population go to church every Sunday, you know, once a week. It just isn't happening. And, I tuned into this prominent right-wing, you know, I mean, it's not, you know, he's on at noon. You know, I can listen to about 5 minutes of him. He lies repeatedly. He's toxic in that. And in fact, that's what these conservative talk show hosts depend on, is getting people, is pitching us at each other's throats. I mean, that's what they're really all about. So I turned on, it's not so much I don't even want to give him publicity, because, you know, he's a multimillionaire and what have you. He's the most prominent person. I just can't even, in a lot of ways, bear to say his name. He's such a distasteful person. But so I tuned in, and what was he going to say? Here was the sad ending to this sad case, the sad situation, this private tragedy inside of this family that has been exploded into this national circus by these right-wing creeps. And so what does the first thing out of his mouth, what does he say? I mean, it doesn't even, no condolences to the family, no sadness at the, you know, at the death. And he says, well, the left, I'm going, what? What is he going to say? The left, I should have copied it down. Because they, you know, it's terrible when you're, I don't want to quote him and say I am. So I want to, because, I mean, this guy's known for his disinformation, his lies, his inaccuracies, and I certainly don't want to be part of that. But essentially, he said, the left, who had cheered on the death of Terri Schiavo, was now getting ready to, would go on to saving the life. Who cheered on the death of Terri Schiavo is now going to try to save the life of, is it Terry Peterson? Is that, you know, that Lacey Peterson's, I don't even think that's his right name. I mean, I know so little about this stuff. There's important things in the world, and one of them isn't the Peterson case, and another one isn't the Schiavo case, and another one isn't the Jackson case. It's what's happening with our economy. What's happening with our schools? What's happening with the future of employment in this country? What's happening with a war in Iraq and Iran that goes, Iraq and Afghanistan that goes on endlessly? And our national treasure goes down the drain there. That's what's important. So Terri Peterson, that doesn't even sound right. Lacey and Terry, but anyways, her husband. So I'm thinking how vile this character is. To suggest, for one thing, the left, what the hell did the left have to do with it? Where was the left? The only people, say the liberals, that were involved in the Terri Schiavo case, quite a few of them voted for this Terri Schiavo bill, this unwarranted, unconstitutional attempt at assaulting the another branch of the government, the judiciary. They voted, some of them voted for it. And the only prominent person on the left that even weighed into this was Reverend Jesse Jackson who went down there and supported the Schindlers. So what the hell is this maniac talking about, and why is he trying to create this? I don't even know. It's so distressing that I get at a loss for words. That in order to carry out this twisted political agenda, much of which is just very personal, a man, I'm going to say his name here, Rush Limbaugh, who cannot manage his own personal affairs, who goes through marriage after marriage, who's addicted to drugs, he's going to come on like a prominent spokesman for morality? Give me a break. Now, it gets even creepier. Re-enter Tom DeLay, a man so corrupt that he has an ongoing defense fund for fear that he's going to be indicted for corruption charges. He's got, you know, all his cronies and all the big businesses that he's helped out already contributing money. And something like the fascist he is, Tom DeLay, the head of the Republicans in the House, says the time. And this is about the Schiavo case. The conservatives portrayed her death as a result of an unaccountable judiciary. And here's what DeLay says. The time will come for the men responsible for this to answer for their behavior, but not today. The time will come for the men responsible for this to answer for their behavior, but not today. I mean, what more of, at best, a political threat, and at worst, a physical threat? He says the courts thumb their nose at Congress and the president. Hey, Tom, that's what they're supposed to do. It's called checks and balances. Courts review legislation, and they have the final word. They're purposely made unelectable so that they're not subject to the pressure of right-wing fanatics like you, Tom DeLay. Here's what he also said. DeLay condemned the state and federal judges who refused to prolong her life. He warned lawmakers He warned that lawmakers, quote, will look at an arrogant and out-of-control judiciary that thumbs its nose at Congress and the president. Then he said, I never thought I'd see the day when a U.S. judge stopped feeding a living American so that they took 14 days to die. Well, a couple of things. When you pull the plug from people, that's what happens. Secondly, that's the way people died. They became so ill, for instance, that they stopped eating and drinking. And they're, you know, prior to the ability to feed in this, you know, medical technological manner, people died like that. They stopped taking nourishment. They could no longer eat. They could no longer swallow. And death came slowly and a lot of people think painlessly. You see, it says page 3. They talk about, this is not the first time either, Nancy Cruzan. Who was 25 when a 1983 car crash left her in a vegetative state, lived nearly 8 years before the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that her feeding tube could be withdrawn. So it's quite the same thing. So old Tom DeLay doesn't think that people ought to be starved to death. Well, we've already talked about how he is supporting legislation in the Bush budget that would cut hundreds of thousands of elderly people off of government support, many of them on feeding tubes, that kids would be denied food stamps under the new Bush budget that is being led in the House by Tom DeLay. But even worse, what about overseas? UN rights expert charges U.S. using food access as military tactics. This one's quite long. But Gene Ziegler said in a report, the situation of the right to food in Iraq is of serious concern. Report highlighted, this is the United Nations report, widespread concerns about the continued lack of access to clean drinking water and allegations by British campaigner that water sources were deliberately cut off by coalition forces in Fallujah and that the blockade imposed on food and the destruction of water reservoirs was used as a weapon of war. Well, we have Terry Schiavo, who at best was severely brain damaged and at worst in a permanent vegetative state, being denied food and water. On the other hand, here, thousands of people, as a tactic of war, under violating all international law and the Geneva Accords. Also, according to the United Nations monitor, the war on Iraq has doubled malnutrition among Iraqi children. So since Saddam Hussein was captured, that the malnutrition among Iraqi children, starving to death, essentially, live children, healthy children, has doubled since the United Nations occupation. And this attack on the judiciary, I mean, it just has this Hitler-esque sound to it. The way Hitler, always before coming to absolute power, would threaten that once he was in power, his enemies would pay. And just like Tom DeLay says, where is that little thing? No, I can't find it. The time will come for the men responsible for this to answer to their behavior, for their behavior. Now, the Supreme Court has denied Schiavo family requests 6 times. There's 40 judges, including the last one, Judge Greer in Florida, who was a Christian conservative, who refused the family's demands over the years. So is he going to hold 40 judges responsible for this? Is this what we can expect for him? A conservative judge, a guy that has just a terrible record on social issues, that he upheld Alabama's right to ban the sale of sex toys, and he upheld Florida's ability to prohibit adoption by gay couples. And he said here that the decision to deny a rehearing to Schiavo's parents, he said Judge Birch went way out of his way to castigate Bush and congressional Republicans for acting, quote, in a manner demonstrably at odds with our founding fathers' blueprint for governance of a free people, our Constitution. This by a right-wing conservative judge, the kind that Bushko is trying to get in and fill our entire judiciary. Even he realizes that the unwarranted and unconstitutional assault on the judiciary is dangerous to the whole process. So these people aren't conservatives. They have what the hell are they trying to conserve? What have they ever tried to conserve other than slavery and stuff like that, right? And let's just quickly look at the elements. Remember I was saying that Rushbaugh is saying that this was a, you know, the left celebrated Terri Schiavo's death. Now is going on to try to save the life of Terry Peterson, or whatever the hell his name is. Just this calumny, this lie that there's, you know, nothing like that going on. But there certainly is with the right wing. I mean, there is no doubt about that whatsoever. Let me see. Nobody has told me yet that I've. So maybe it is Terry, because no one yet has said to me, you got the wrong name there. But let's look at the role of the right wing in this. They're surrounded by right wing fanatics. Now, of all the people on the planet that the Schindlers, Terri Schiavo's parents, could have picked to represent them, why in the world would they? Why would they pick a man who has encouraged violence against people he doesn't agree with, who's been arrested innumerable times, who has all sorts of lawsuits against him, and has resorted to violence and encouraged murder to be their spokesman? These are the, you know, what is it, the culture of life, you know, the pro-life and all that. What a load of crap. Who did they pick? Terry Randall. Now, Terry Randall is, he was head of Operation Rescue. He's a theocrat. Here's what he said. He was addressing doctors. He said, when I or people like me are running the country, you'd better flee, because we will find you, we will try you, and we will execute you. I mean every word of it. I will make it part of my mission to see to it that you are tried and executed. This is who the Schindlers have as their spokesperson. All sorts of responsible people, people with decent ideas, people with credibility, and again, this fascistic approach. We will deal with our enemies. When we lose, we remember and we will kill. Here's something else that the spokesman for the Schindler family said. The greatest crisis we face is not child killing. That's what he means by abortion. It's not the sodomites. That's our gay friends and neighbors and relative. It's not the intrusion of the federal government into our lives, our families, as they crush our liberties. The greatest crisis we face tonight is a crisis of leadership. This is the Schindler family spokesman. We are facing a crisis of righteous, courageous, physically oriented male leadership. Male leadership, this nut screams. God established patriarchy when he established the world. God established a patriarchal world. So says the spokesman for the Schindler family. So we have, you know, again, what are we, you know, all of this, righteous, courageous, physically oriented, pure fascism. Absolutely pure fascism. Alfred Ross, who was president of the Institute for Democracy Studies, he said, I coordinated the research at the Planned Parenthood Federation of America when our doctors and staff were being murdered by anti-choice militants. At that time, Randall Terry was making statements like, if you think that abortion is murder, then act like it's murder. He suborned killing. And then finally, the people, the Schiavo donors, the parents of Terry Schiavo, have authorized a conservative direct mailing firm to sell a list of donors to their legal expenses, making it likely that thousands of strangers moved by Terry Schiavo's plight will receive a steady stream of solicitations from anti-abortion and conservative groups. Oh, yeah, and then there was also, remember this, another one of these people that hopped on the bandwagon, went down there and wound up speaking for the family sometimes, denouncing Michael Schiavo, Father Frank A. Pavone, said the Roman Catholic Church plans to establish its first religious society devoted exclusively to fighting euthanasia and abortion, church leaders said this week. So they have rewarded this nutball who is, again, going to attempt to destroy the right to choose. These religious fascists are going to attempt to impose their sense of biology and theology on the rest of us, even though we don't agree with it. The church finds itself battling a plague as spiritually fatal as any she has ever fought before, the plague of the culture of death. How about the plague of pedophilia that has ripped the American church apart? Oh, man. A professor from a Bible college near Scranton, Pennsylvania, was arrested last Tuesday as he tried to storm into the hospice caring for Terry Schiavo. Dal Persley, 56, was zapped with a taser stun gun, tackled to the ground by officers before he reached the door. Persley, who was on the faculty of the Baptist Bible College and Seminary in Clark Summit, Pennsylvania, had two bottles of water with him, police said. He was charged with attempted burglary and resisting arrest. Now, what the hell? I mean, two bottles of water. A woman can't swallow. She has no capacity to do that. But this nutball is going to run in there and do that. Also, fortunately, the Michigan militia said that they were trying to put together an unarmed coalition of state militias that were prepared to storm the Florida hospice where Terry Schiavo had been left to die and take her to a safe house. This is pure madness. This is like the Middle Ages. Religion, rather than caring for people's spiritual needs that want it. I don't want it. This makes me less want it than ever. Although, like I always say, the only Christians I know in my life, the only Jews I know in my life, the only Muslims I know in my life are good, decent people who act out what they call social witness. They prove their faith to Yahweh or Jesus or Muhammad by creating good acts in the world. They don't run around trying to stop women who have come to a different conclusion than they have. They don't go making a spectacle of a family feud. They're just vile, absolutely beneath contempt in my estimation. All right, like Mike Malloy says, have I told you tonight how much I hate these people? Let's take Mike in Farmington. Mike, hi, it's Peter Werby, you're on the air.
Hi, Peter. I just want to say I've been listening to you since I was like 12 years old and big fan. And I just want to say rest in peace to Mitch Hedberg, who's, to me, one of the best comedians ever. He just died Wednesday, so.
Wait, who died?
Mitch Hedberg.
Huh. Okay.
Yeah. You probably don't know him, but he had, like, special and Comedy Central and stuff. I just saw him in February. And it hasn't gotten any news, but he's just so funny. I just want at least someone to hear about it, so.
Well, okay.
Okay.
We got it. Thank you. Is that real? Come on. Is there really somebody with that name? Here's Chris in Ontario. Chris, where are you calling from across the border?
Bell River, Ontario.
Where? Bell River?
Bell River,
yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've sailed there before. Go ahead.
Listen, first of all, you got to stop bashing, all right? It's not working. It's not working very well. But listen, I...
Wait. What do you mean it's not working?
Well, because it's extreme. I mean, it's a little too far-fetched. I mean, I agree with you on Rush.
Wait a minute. Do you think it's too extreme to criticize extremists?
Well, you're taking extremists to another level. I mean, you're criticizing... You are.
How? No. You've said I am. I am. How? How am I doing it?
Because, yes, when you say Rush Limbaugh is too far right, yes, you're correct.
Yeah.
He's criticizing leftists. So, but, you see, there's got to be a middle. There's got to be a middle of the road somewhere.
Well, you know, there's... what I'm trying to think of this guy's name, a guy from Texas. Why, he's on my website. I've broadcast with him before. I'll think of it in a second. He said, since he's from Texas, he said, there's nothing in the middle of the road except yellow stripes and dead armadillos.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
I guess I'm a dead armadillo. Anyway,
well, go ahead.
I want to get back to Terry Schiavo for a minute.
Sure.
A living will is a legal document saying that you will die the way you want to die.
Right.
If you don't want to be a vegetable, you won't be a vegetable. You will not be put on a feeding tube. You will not be put on a respirator. And I just wonder, considering how close it was to the Pope's death, if anybody considered taking him off a feeding tube or anything else. Because I think there's obviously two levels or three levels or six levels of society that say that this person's going to die and that person's not. Well, you know, we'll keep this one alive and not this one. But in Terry Schiavo's case, the media got involved and decided, this happens 10 times a day where someone is on a feeding tube and they
right.
say, no, family says, no, take them off.
Well,
you have a legal
well yeah, the other thing I don't understand about the Pope, why he was saying that he wanted these feeding tubes. I mean, you know me, I mean, I don't have any sense of an afterlife, so this is it. And so maybe I don't want to hang around a little or as long as I could. But if you think you're going to go sit at the knee of God, why do you want to hang around anymore?
Do you want to be kept on a feeding tube? Fine.
Yeah.
So get a lawyer and sign.
You know what?
Otherwise, your family's making the decisions for you, or the media's making the decisions for you.
You're absolutely right,
and that hypocrite George W. is going to make the decision for you because he's keeping Terry Schiavo alive, but these other prisoners in Texas are going to be executed. So, you know, we'll kill this one and keep this one alive because it's popular with the common people. So,
well, thank you for making our show international.
Not a problem.
I appreciate it. Thanks for joining us. Let's see. Brandon writes into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Right. It's Scott Peterson, not Terry. What am I? Probably just got, the Terry Schiavo thing confused there. But interestingly, he said, Scott Peterson, he said, congratulations on not knowing his name. You are better off. Yeah. I mean, I would agree with that. Dean writes into Call Talk, yes, saying it's Scott Peterson, not Terry as well. Yeah, Terry did not make any sense as I said it. But, yeah, you know, Brian also, Brian is listening in Panama, like Panama in the country of, is that where, I mean, that's what I mean. We got people all over the world. Scott Peterson is on death row. Lacey Peterson was murdered and found in San Francisco Bay. I don't know of any Terry Peterson. Right. Well, I told a story last week where apparently Scott Peterson was convicted and these neighbors of ours said, hey, did you hear Scott Peterson was convicted? And my wife looked at him and said, who's Scott Peterson? And they laughed like they thought she was kidding. But we don't pay any attention to that stuff, man. All right, we'll be right back.
You're listening to WRIF.com. And that's the reason Condoleezza Rice won't take my phone calls anymore. Thanks for the question, caller. Hey, it's Biker Bob answering your motorcycle questions every night, overnight. Let's see, Brian from Berkeley, you're up with Biker Bob.
Yeah, hi, Bob. My bike's making this weird and funny noise. If I could play it over the phone, could you tell me what's wrong with it?
Sure, Bob, fire away. Well, heck, Bob, I know right away what's wrong with your bike. It's not a Harley-Davidson motorcycle. I'd recognize that Harley V-twin anywhere rumbling through town. What's the matter with you, son? Didn't your mom hug you enough? Stop down to our store in Taylor and hear the sweet sound of Milwaukee Iron. All right, we're out of time. Thanks for the question. Listen to us again for more advice on your Harley-Davidson motorcycles.
Biker Bob's Harley-Davidson Service Department is open 7 days a week. Stop in for while-you-wait oil changes and service with a smile. And maybe even a little bad on the backside.
Biker Bob's Harley-Davidson is in Taylor on Telegraph, just north of Eureka. For more info, you can jump onto that there World Wide Web on any handy-dandy computer at www.bikerbobsharley.com. For a good time and a great ride, hang out at Biker Bob's.
There are so many choices in mortgages these days. For the first-time homebuyer and even for experienced homeowners looking simply to refinance, searching for a mortgage can be a frustrating and confusing time. Why not let Financial Independence Mortgage make your financing search easier? Financial Independence Mortgage provides you with all the relevant information about mortgages and will find you the perfect mortgage to fit your personal needs. It's as simple as filling out a one-page application, and Financial Independence won't make you wait long for your approval. Typically, you'll get a response within 24 hours. Get a free quote from all of the top lending institutions so you know you have a fair comparison of what's available to you on the market. You simply can't find a better, more thorough, more personalized way to ensure yourself of getting the best mortgage at the best rate possible. Competitive rates, very fast closing times, and Financial Independence Mortgage can handle exactly the type of mortgage to fit your personal needs, whether or not you have some blemishes on your credit. Find out today the difference Financial Independence Mortgage can make for you at 248-594-7582. That's Financial Independence Mortgage at 248-594-7582.
This is WRIF.com.
It's everything a man could want. Women, motorcycles, sports, beer, and me!
Hey guys, Tom May from Revenge of the Telemarketers, and I am hosting 101 WRIF's 4th Annual Motor City Men's Expo, Saturday, April 2nd from 11 till 6 at the Novi Expo Center, sponsored by Dodge.
Join the Riff's Drew and Mike broadcasting live. Meet Kip and Pedro from Napoleon Dynamite.
Your mom goes to college.
Brought to you by the mortgage experts at Rock Financial, Red Wings' Darian Hatcher and Darren McCarty, along with Grinder, plus Detroit Lion Kevin Jones. Meet Playboy Playmates Kimberly Holland and Pilar Lastra.
Check out Sweet Rides, bikes, electronics, sports, music, entertainment, and so much more, dude. Register to win over $10,000 in prizes. And check out the bikini contest for tip back a cold one at the Miller Lite Sports Lounge.
The 2005 Motor City Men's Expo.
Saturday, April 2nd at the Novi Expo Center. Admission is just $7. Click on WREF.com for a special discount admission coupon. Sponsored by Dodge, Grab Life by the Horns, Motor City Golf Warehouse, Motor City Harley-Davidson, Napa Auto Parts, Miller Lite, and 101 WRIF.
Poker enthusiasts, MDA hosts their first annual Texas Hold'em Tournament. Call 586-274-9000 to secure your seat at the Men's Expo.
Hi, boys. Where do you go to get your hair cut? Are you still going to the same old boring barber shop or the overpriced salon?
Well, it's time for a change of scenery because Lady Jane's has just opened new shops in Novi and Troy. Get your haircut at a guy's place. No women, no children allowed. And we make getting your haircut fun.
Lady Jane's new Novi and Troy locations have only the finest all-female staff, ensuring a pleasurable experience. Not to be confused with a regular salon. This is a guy's place with your own TV at every station. And the person.
Now, Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's your host, Peter Werby.
All right, thank you very much. Welcome back. Thanks for joining us. A lot of emails starting to come in. Let me just grab a couple of those. Where the hell did they go? Oh, yeah. Well, I'll read where this is from when I'm finished. Hi, Peter. I was just visiting your website at peterwerbe.com. That's P-E-T-E-R-W-E-R-B-E.com. And saw your ad to turn off corporate TV, and I'm glad you have that. I turned off my TV weeks ago, and I hear your callers calling all distraught about the crap on television. Hope you will actually mention out loud this recommendation. My house is peaceful. My 11-year-old son and my 20-year-old don't miss it a bit. It would be the best product to boycott en masse. I've begun, and I encourage everyone to follow suit. No real news, no money for TV, not to mention the fact that satellite TV was supposed to eliminate the advertising. Now we get 52 minutes of commercials for every 3 hours of TV. It's a jip. Boycott cable and satellite television. It's willful, paid-for ignorance. Thanks for all you do. The stream is fine here in Ennis, Montana. Pamela. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate it. By the way, I maybe read 5% of the letters. I just can't get it. There's just way too many. So I appreciate you writing in, and I do read them all. The shorter the better. In fact, particularly now, if you when I'm on the air, if they got to be short. I mean, if they're longer, I read them. Okay, let's go back to our phones. We were talking just the kind of cleaning up the Schiavo case and this this right wing. This, for one thing, the attempt of the right wing to make this a an issue involving the left, which had absolutely nothing involved in it. This was purely an act of hysteria on the part of the right wing, and they really took it bad. I mean, 80% of the American people said that Bush and Congress should never have intervened. And Bush's poll numbers are sinking badly, back to probably where they should have been, back where they would have been all along if it wasn't for 9/11. People are really beginning to see him and his crew for the right-wing fanatics that they are. All right, here's Brad in Shelby Township. Brad, hi, it's Peter Werby. You're on the air.
How you doing, Peter?
Good.
I just had a comment, really, about the Schiavo thing, and I'm not really sure there's a right answer to it, but one thing I was a little surprised and quite honestly a little disappointed is that no one mentioned how she got in that state in the first place, and that was an eating disorder.
Right.
And I talked to my parents about this the day she died, and we agreed that the only good that could come out of this is if either the family or the husband kind of used the publicity that this case got towards something against or some sort of, information for eating disorders and what people can do about it. It just seems to me that this is much ado about nothing, and it's the government should never have been in the first place. If it were, it should have been Florida and nothing else.
Mm-hmm. Well, Florida officials and the Florida courts were. It was right. The unwarranted intervention of the federal court and the federal government. Hey, Brad, actually, I did a whole show. Some of these interviews maybe run a little too late. It might have been either 1 a.m. or last week. I think it was maybe at 1:30 a.m. Eastern time. I did an interview with a woman named Jean Kilborn who actually talked considerably about the whole idea of how Terri Schiavo wound up in this place in the first place through this bulimic state where she was so low on potassium. Her website is Jean Kilborn, K-I-L-B-O-U-R-N-E. Or you can go to my website, Peter Werby, W-E-R-B-E.com. And at the top bar it says guests. And go down a ways and there's a link to her website. Yeah, and she talks a whole thing about body images of women and how advertising is so toxic to women, trying to make them fit images that it's almost impossible for most women to do.
Yeah, I'm studying to be a teacher right now, and some of those subjects have come up in my classes, and it just seemed very timely that they did while I was studying this while this case was going on. And I just say, it just seemed that it was so something so obvious and something any type of group should have stood up and talked to them mm-hmm. at that time. I think it was a missed opportunity for everyone, and this just has become a complete disaster over nothing.
Thank you, Brad.
Yep.
Appreciate your call. Here's Wendell in Oxford. Hi, Wendell. It's Peter Werby. You're on the air.
Yeah, me and my friends, we discuss this every now and then, and it still baffles me. George Bush had a large percentage of vote, of like the Christian vote, and a lot of people said that, Kerry got a lot of the, just because they didn't want Bush, but Bush also got a lot of the gay vote, too. And I was wondering how, considering he was so strongly against gays. I mean,
I've never seen actually any statistics one way or the other. It's hard for me to believe that he got very many votes of gays. There's a Republican gay organization, which I think called the Log Cabin Republicans, which I don't even think they withheld their endorsement of him. First time they've ever done that.
Well, we were discussing it, and we concluded that maybe that it was Arnold Schwarzenegger, because he is governor of California, and there's a large gay percentage in California, that maybe that's how he got it. What's your opinion on it?
Well, only that I'd have to see some statistics. I would tend to doubt it. I mean, I would suspect if 1% did, that would be a considerable amount. I mean, anything, say, like even beyond 10%, I would be extraordinarily surprised.
From the percentage that we were talking about, it was more like around 18. So it was.
Where'd you get the stats, though? Where did this come from?
Mr. Niss, my social studies teacher, looked it up on the...
It could be, but still, 82% of a particular group is pretty overwhelming. I mean, I know all the gays in our neighborhood were certainly overwhelmingly opposed to him and were just They weren't even furious. They were, particularly with this vote in Michigan that put into the Constitution that gays could not marry. I mean, it was people in the state of Michigan telling them, you don't have the same qualities of a human being as the rest of us do. So they were pretty depressed. All right, thanks, Brad, or Wendell, rather. Thanks, Wendell. Appreciate it. Let's go way out to New Mexico and get Roy in Placitas, New Mexico. Hi, Roy. You're on the air.
Hey, good afternoon, Peter. How you doing?
Good afternoon. Are we that? The time zone's that different?
Well, the whole day's been kind of goofed up.
Yeah. What's going on?
Talking about the Shiloh, or whatever her name is.
Shivo, yeah.
I think that this whole controversy, the whole cable news hubbub, it was about the Supreme Court. They're setting this whole thing up. This whole right to life thing is just tying in to get their base chewed up, stirred up, ready to go nuclear on the filibuster sometime in the next week or two.
Yeah, but I think it backfired on them, don't you?
I hope.
Oh.
But I don't know. You know, who was it that said you can never go broke underestimating the stupidity of the American people?
Well, one of the things I'm going to do, either now or right at our midnight, is get a little positive and talk about the good news that Bush is really nosediving in the polls. So it's only the fascistic right, the one-third of the population, and probably that would be then another 8 or 9% that, you know, the section of the population you can fool all the time.
I keep hoping that that's the case. Part of me wants to go that way, and I love to see the numbers. I thought they were great.
The only problem is, Roy, is that there's nothing substantial for people to group around. I mean, the Democratic Party, for all practical purposes, is a dead letter in terms of actually providing an agency or some form through which people can express their dislike of these policies. And there aren't any, although there's lots of peace activity, civil rights, civil liberties, all of that, there's nothing that's taken on the quality of a mass movement. So the right has most of the media so bamboozled that whatever their agenda is, suddenly it pops into all of our national consciousness, and it gives the impression that most people, or that great numbers of people, support this right-wing agenda, which really they don't.
It serves two purposes. One, it creates delusion, as you were saying, and it also turns so many people off that they just quit paying attention.
Yeah, well, they do, and that's what they count on. They count on us.
And when you've got this bunch of thugs in the Senate, you got DeLay paddling, trying to stay out of jail, they're going to do everything they can, and if they create the nuclear option, they've done so many things that 10 or 15 years ago, anybody that would have done it would have gotten run out of town on a rail.
Well, I absolutely agree with you, but ultimately the responsibility is ours as individuals, as neighborhoods and communities, as cities and states. If we've just sat around hoping that the bad guys wouldn't be bad like they are, or that the guys we think are good were going to do not just be kind of part of the racket and be quiet, we're sadly mistaken. So we either have to be objects within history to be acted upon, or we have to be subjects in history and create it ourselves. And people have done that. This country has the history of people being the subject of history. That is, we made a revolution. We ended slavery. We got the women the vote. We stopped wars. We ended segregation, on and on and on. We formed unions. We can all do that. But if we're sitting back watching Foxhole News and going, oh, nobody agrees with us, we're dumber than I think.
We had two big wards in our county, and we ended up taking about 70.
Are you with me? Well, you're not. Okay. Roy calling in from New Mexico, so we won't get that part of the story. I said before that Brian was writing from Panama, the country of. But he said, Dear Peter, I am not from the country of Panama, Panama is my last name. All right, sorry. Didn't mean to mess that one up. Did Nearly, this is an interesting one. what does this mean? Did Nero, remember he was the crazy emperor of Rome? See, we, you know, what happened with Rome? It was a republic, right? And then it became this empire. And there was Caesar and people like him, a couple after. And then we got the lunatics, the Caligulas and the Neros. And what I always say, we're going from republic to empire, and we don't even get the Caesars. We just get the Neros and the Caligulas. But Warren writes in the call talk, yes, at yahoo.com, did Nero get it right? Didn't he marry a goat or something? What the hell does that mean? All right. I don't know what it means. Maybe I shouldn't even put it on the air. We got some open lines, 313-298-WRIF. Well, not seeing any indication. I'll just choose Dawn and Warren. Dawn, hi, it's Peter Werby, and you're on the air.
Hey, how are you?
Doing good, thanks.
All right, I'm turning down my radio.
That's good. Hey, can you hear the show on hold?
Pardon me?
When you're on hold, can you hear the show?
No, actually, I can't.
Boy.
Yeah, it's really loud music. And
music?
It.
You hear music when you're on hold?
Yeah, really loud music. Some rock and roll, man.
What the hell does that mean? We, you know, our engineers check that.
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead. What's on your mind?
Well, actually, you know, regarding Shivo again. First of all, the gentleman that called from Canada, he had mentioned there's got to be a middle road. Of course, I agree that there does have to be a middle road. However, you know, tell me, if President Bush's father was like Shivo was, would he allow him to have that quality, that kind of quality of life?
We don't know, do we?
No, we actually, no, we don't. But I can tell you this. My father was very sick and very ill, and when someone goes into hospice, they're in hospice to die.
Right.
Okay? And my father was in hospice at our home, and my father ended up dying, okay? And the bottom line is that that's how he wanted to go. He made that known.
Mm-hmm.
He made that known. And, you know, so here, you know, you talk to Republicans that they have the Christian party and this, that, and the other. Well, you know, if it was his father or his brother, Jeb, from Florida, what would he do?
Well, I think what's happening, Dawn, is you're talking sense and compassion, and that's not what's driving these people. They're always looking for wedge issues, how they can support their base or how they can move people away from you know, voting Democratic. So there's never I don't think an instant of any policy that they ever put forth. And if you think about it, I mean, what have all these conservatives and Republicans accomplished in the last 5 years other than make this country a debtor nation, drive it into social chaos, and all the while scheming to get more and more power?
Oh, exactly. And Michigan has the highest unemployment rate, too.
Yeah.
So, you know, there you go. I'm very happy to hear that Bush's numbers are down.
Well, stay tuned in about, what do we got, 11:52 in about 10 minutes or so, and I'll give you all the details, okay?
Oh, awesome. And you know what? I'm the first woman that's called in.
All right. Well, thank you. Let's get more. There's even there's no open lines. But thank you, Dawn.
Thank you.
All right. I've always thought over the years, I don't know whether it's WRIF or me, but we don't get many women callers in. Here's, you know, there's always such squabbling between religions. They're always trying to, you know, kill each other very frequently, even different sections of the same religion, you know, the Islam or Christianity. You think about Northern Ireland. But there's been this incredible unity between the major leaders of the three faiths, Christianity, Judaism, and Islam, making a rare show of unity, trying to stop a gay festival in Jerusalem. I mean, I just couldn't believe this. International gay leaders are planning a 10-day World Pride Festival and parade in Jerusalem in August, saying they want to make a statement about tolerance and diversity in the holy city, home to three great religious traditions. Three bigoted, prejudiced ones, I would add. But so they want to make a statement about tolerance and diversity, and the major leaders of the three faiths, Christianity, Judaism, and Islam, are making a rare show of unity to try to stop the festival. They say the event would desecrate the city and convey the erroneous impression that homosexuality is acceptable. And I got to say, I mean, you know, if well, never mind. Some of you might be offended by this. I won't say it. I should say. But they are creating a deep and terrible sorrow that is unbearable, said Shlomo Amar, Israel's Sephardic chief rabbi. And they go on and on and like this. We can't bend Abdel Aziz Bukharia, Sufi sheikh, added, we can't permit anyone to come and make the holy city dirty. This is very ugly, very nasty to have these people come to Jerusalem. What vile people. I mean, this is why I wind up... overall, I got to tell you this. I mean, you know, you can dislike me for this, but why I wind up hating religion, absolutely despising it. Okay, then I go out, of course, and I meet, I go downtown to Central Methodist Church and see the incredible good work that Reverend Ed Rowe is doing, or the people in the Michigan Coalition for Human Rights who had their dinner tonight and had Reverend Anthony as their speaker, or listen to the kind of trips that Bishop Gumbelton has taken to Iraq and Colombia and what have you. And I think, man, these are good people. You know, these are good people. But generally when I read, I still think they're probably footnotes. Or when I was in Havana, I ran into these Christians from Detroit who were bringing medicine and food to a country that's in many ways missing all of that because of the U.S. blockade. And I think, man, these are good people. Yeah? They came here at personal risk, at and I think, man, these are good people. But sometimes I think they're just footnotes. That what religion is about is just setting people against one another. Making people feel awful about themselves for acting out their desires, whether it's, you know, sex before marriage or homosexuality or whatever, and telling them that they're dirty. I mean, the gay people I know, and this creep, supposed to be a respected religious leader, saying they're dirty. I'd rather have 1,000 gay friends than one of these bigots and intolerant people, toxic to our community. And that's what I mean when I keep using that word. Here where I live in this whole, you know, Ferndale, Royal Oak, Oak Park area, it's integrated on every level, in income, racially, sexual preference. I'm trying to think if there's anything else. We all get along just fine. And how we judge one another is, what kind of decent human beings are we? Well, what do you add to our neighborhood? And some guy like this says, they're dirty. And so this, the toxicity that they add to our community, because communities are based on mutual respect. You know, they're based on having respect for people's differences. And what they want is homogeneity. They want everyone to be homogeneity. Uh-oh. Think about that. Anyways, let's take a break. We'll be right back.
This is Biker Bob answering your motorcycle questions every night, overnight. Let's see, our next caller, we have Mark from Melvindale. What's your question for Biker Bob?
I store my bike in my garage in the winter and just started it up to hear that Harley rumble, then it won't start. The battery is dead. Why? Oh, God, why did my battery have to die?
Oh, there, bud. That's an easy win for sure. Stop down to our store in Taylor and pick up what's called a trickle charger. It provides a little stream of juice to keep it juiced up. Think of it as a natural male enhancer for your battery. Heck, I even use it for... Oops, well, that's all the time we have for today, folks. Listen to us again for more advice on your Harley-Davidson motorcycles.
Biker Bob's Harley-Davidson service department is open 7 days a week. Stop in for While You Wait oil changes and service with a smile, and maybe even a little bat on the backside.
Biker Bob's Harley-Davidson is in Taylor on Telegraph, just north of Eureka. For more info, you can jump onto that there World Wide Web on any handy-dandy computer at www.biker... What the... damn computer, son of a gun. At www.bikerbobsharley.com. For a good time and a great ride, hang out at Biker Bob's.
There are so many choices in mortgages these days. For the first-time homebuyer and even for experienced homeowners looking simply to refinance, searching for a mortgage can be a frustrating and confusing time. Why not let Financial Independence Mortgage make your financing search easier? Financial Independence Mortgage provides you with all the relevant information about mortgages and will find you the perfect mortgage to fit your personal needs. It's as simple as filling out a one-page application, and Financial Independence won't make you wait long for your approval. Typically, you'll get a response within 24 hours. Get a free quote from all of the top lending institutions, so you know you have a fair comparison of what's available to you on the market. You simply can't find a better, more thorough, more personalized way to ensure yourself of getting the best mortgage at the best rate possible. Competitive rates, very fast closing times, and Financial Independence Mortgage can handle exactly the type of mortgage to fit your personal needs, whether or not you have some blemishes on your credit. Find out today the difference Financial Independence Mortgage can make for you at 248-594-7582. That's Financial Independence Mortgage at 248-594-7582.
WRIF.com.
It's everything a man could want. Women, motorcycles, sports, beer, and me!
Hey guys, Tom May from Revenge on the Telemarketers, and I am hosting 101 WRIF's 4th Annual Motor City Man's Expo, Saturday, April 2nd from 11 till 6 at the Novi Expo Center, sponsored by Dodge.
Join the Riffs, Drew, and Mike broadcasting live. Meet Kip and Pedro from Napoleon Dynamite.
Your mom goes to college.
Brought to you by the mortgage experts at Rock Financial, Red Wings' Darian Hatcher and Darren McCarty, along with Grinder, plus Detroit Lion Kevin Jones. Meet Playboy Playmates Kimberly Holland and Pilar Lastra.
Check out Sweet Rides, bikes, electronic sports, music, entertainment, and so much more, dude. Register to win over $10,000 in prizes. And check out the bikini contest or tip back a cold one at the Miller Lite Sports Lounge.
The 2005 Motor City Men's Expo.
Saturday, April 2nd at the Novi Expo Center. Admission is just $7. Click on WREF.com for a special discount admission coupon. Sponsored by Dodge. Grab life by the horns. Motor City Golf Warehouse. Motor City Harley-Davidson. Napa Auto Parts. Miller Lite. And 101 WRIF.
Poker enthusiasts. MDA hosts our first annual Texas Hold'em Tournament. Call 586-274. 9000 to secure your seat at the Men's Expo.
Hi, boys. Where do you go to get your hair cut? Are you still going to the same old boring barber shop or the overpriced salon?
Well, it's time for a change of scenery because Lady Jane's has just opened new shops in Novi and Troy. Get your haircut at a guy's place. No women, no children allowed. And we make getting your haircut fun.
Lady Jane's new Novi and Troy locations have only the finest all-female staff, ensuring a pleasurable experience. Not to be confused with a regular salon. This is a guy's place with your own TV at every station and the personal service that you deserve.
So sit back and enjoy the scenery, and we'll be glad to take care of you.
For their grand opening, Lady Jane's Barbershop in Troy and Novi have haircuts for only $10. That's right, haircuts are only $10 for the entire month of March. No appointment is necessary. Visit Lady Jane's new location in Troy on Rochester Road just north of Big Beaver or on 10 Mile in Novi for this March special.
At Lady Jane's, we'll treat you right.
At TGE Energy Music Theater. Glenn Tipton, Scott Travis, K.K. Downing, and Ian Hill. Judas Priest, live. Pick up the new album, Angel of Retribution, in stores now. Judas Priest, in concert, with special guest, Queensryche. Tickets are on sale right now at PalaceNet.com, the Palace Box Office, Ticketmaster, or charge at 248-645-6666. Saturday night, June 4th at DTE Energy Music Theater, the greatest metal band ever, Judas Priest. Brought to you by Miller Genuine Draft Live. Real music, real flavor.
Hello.
How are you?
Hey, it's June, Mike, and Monday morning, it's opening day, Tiger Baseball Monday, and we're giving away more tickets to that game, and we'll talk with Brandon Inge, all that and more. We'll come up with lots more for you with us, June, Mike, in the morning on 101 WRIF Detroit.
We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's Peter Werby.
All right, thank you very much. Welcome back. I've got another hour, and then, it might be a good time to mention this, although I have to have the information here to be able to mention it. Too many pieces of paper. Anyways, at 1 a.m. Eastern time, I'll have an interview with Tom Hayden. Man, formerly, what a way to be known, formerly married to Jane Fonda, but also a civil rights activist in the 1960s, a state legislator in California for 18 years, and he's going to be in Detroit next Saturday, the 9th, at St. Joseph's Episcopal Church on the corner of Woodward and 11 Mile Road in Royal Oak, and it's a teaching about Iraq. I remember the first teaching was 40 years ago at the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor. That word entered our lexicon came from the sit-ins that were happening throughout the South at the time. They had a teach-in, and these became this phenomena all over the world, in fact. So an old-fashioned teach-in on Iraq, try to bring this back to the fore rather than going on and on about Terry Schiavo. This war continues, draining our fortune, destroying Iraq, killing thousands and thousands of Iraqi, killing dozens and dozens of our soldiers. And also, yeah, here's another thing. I'll be at this. This Wednesday, April 6th, at 7:45 p.m. at the Main Theater. The Main Theater is on Main and 11 Mile Road in Royal Oak. There's going to be a showing of Danny Schechter's film. You may remember an interview I did with Danny, an old pal of mine. It's called Weapons of Mass Deception. Weapons of Mass Deception. And I'll be introducing the person who will introduce the film. So at 7:45 this coming Wednesday, and then Saturday at St. Joseph's. All of this is on my website, on my calendar, peterwerbe.com, P-E-T-E-R-W-E-R-B-E.com. You can email me at calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Tony's listening way down under in Australia. Geez, it's probably 12 hours difference, so it's like noon there tomorrow or something. How weird is that? He says, I love listening to your show, streaming loud and clear in Australia. Your aspect on things is better than the crap Fox News BS we get shoved down our throat here in Australia. You even have that there? Wow. There's actually a device you can put on your television so you can't even watch it. Now, somebody wrote in and said, didn't Nero, the mad emperor of Rome, marry a goat? Somebody calling him or herself La Proletariat in Seattle writes into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. I think the previous writer had things confused. Caligula married his sister and made his horse a senator. By the way, I think he cut open his sister's tummy to remove a fetus because he didn't want to be challenged. I'm no historian, but I think that's the way it was. Wow. People in power. Oh, yeah. Oh, and let's see. Rich, listening in Boulder, writes in, what liberal progressive causes made advancements this past week? Is there any good news? Well, you wouldn't know it because it's dominated by the issues that right-wing conservatives thrust into the public view. And this dutiful media just goes right along with it. Now, let's look at this. I said this is good news, absolutely good news, because ever since the election, which there is increasing evidence, by the way, that there's no way that Bush could have won the popular vote, but maybe we can get to that another time. So, I mean, it would be two elections in a row that he stole. But in any event, all the liberals that I know, not the, you know, because I consider myself pretty far left of being a liberal, but all the liberals were just wringing their hands. I mean, I was wringing my hands about the fact that we were going to be faced with another 4 years of this far right-wing destruction of our country and our economy and our constitution to benefit the corporations and the wealthy people that that Bush represents. And so I was very unhappy about that. It was the first time I'd ever voted for a Democratic Party candidate for president. And I didn't think much of Kerry, but it was sort of, you know, the AB, what was ABB? Anybody but Bush. In any event, what was I on about that? Oh, yeah, so all these liberals are extraordinarily depressed. They all want to move to Canada, all of this stuff. You know, this is Jesus land. Nobody agrees with us. And even still, I was saying last week, it was a statistic, even if Bush got the figures that they say he did, it was still a statistical dead heat. And so the country was 50-50. And there never was a fair presentation of even Kerry's pitiful campaign. I mean, it wasn't that bad, but it wasn't very good. I mean, who would have won? Is Howard Dean, I think, would have won. What we needed was really a vigorous assault on Bush's war, and also very, very strong defense of like New Deal stuff, like Social Security. Anyways, this is from the Washington Times. Washington Times is this right-wing paper that's financed by the Moonies. It operates at a loss, but this Reverend Moon, in order to put forth his right-wing agenda, subsidizes it. So this is their headline. Bush's plunge in polls tied to domestic issues. This is good news if you're someone like me. President Bush's record low approval ratings are a result primarily of public dissatisfaction with his handling of domestic issues that loom larger than foreign policy in his second term. On issues such as immigration and controlling federal spending, Americans disapprove of the president's approach by margins of at least 20%. Unfortunately for Mr. Bush, Gallup also found that the only 35% of Americans approve of his handling of Social Security, compared with 56% who disapprove. While other surveys show greater approval of the president's Social Security stance, he generally polls worse on domestic issues than foreign. Pardon me. New poll finds Bush priorities are out of step with Americans. This is from the New York Times. Same thing with the New York Times CBS poll. On Social Security, 51% said permitting individuals to invest part of their Social Security taxes in private accounts, the centerpiece of Bush's plan, was a bad idea. The number who thought private accounts were a bad idea jumped to almost 70% of respondents were told that the private accounts would result in a reduction in guaranteed benefits. Almost half said it would actually weaken the economic underpinning of the nation's retirement system, which, of course, it will. Also, more good news. Most Americans say no nation should have nuclear weapons, including the United States. 52% of us think a nuclear attack by one country against another is somewhat or very likely by 2010. Bush, of course, maintaining this nuclear arsenal, even when he had a chance to reduce it missile for missile with Russia, makes him the most dangerous man in the world to our security. And the idea that somehow we're not going to confront Russia at some time in the future the way we did during the Cold War is just dreaming. And we could have significantly disarmed Russia. As it is, it could mean, because of the lack of security in Russia, that there are all these nukes out there anyway. Most Americans surveyed in a poll said they do not think any country, including the United States, should have nuclear weapons. I don't see the figure here, but it's high. So let's get positive. We never do that. All I've been doing for the last 5 years, what I want to do is be able to criticize the man who actually won the 2000 election, Al Gore. So we've been stuck being negative, saying that Bush is destroying the economy. Bush is destroying the environment. Bush is giving away the store to the wealthy. He's destroying the middle class. He's attacking the poor. He's kicking people, elderly and children, off of government support and what have you. It's not good. So let's see how people respond. The University of Maryland has something called the Program on International Policy Attitudes, and what they did... is that they showed essentially just out of whack the federal government, the federal budget that Bush put forth is with the priorities of the American people. PIPA, as it's called, employed an unusual technique in which they presented respondents with a spreadsheet showing 17 areas of the discretionary budget and how much the Bush administration is proposing to spend on them. So in other words, here's the budget, here's what's going to be spent. Respondents were told they could adjust these items up or down as they'd like to see the money spent. Imagine that. Someone say, here's the defense budget. Do you want to spend more? Do you want to spend less? Here's education. Do you want to spend more? Do you want to spend less? They were also given the option to put money towards deficit reduction. So here is how this supposedly conservative electorate responded. Remember, the liberals are despondent. Everybody is right-wing conservative. This is total hooey. Defense spending was cut by an average of 31%. Yeah, cut it by a third. This bloated war budget, absolutely unnecessary, just nothing but boondoggles and corruption. The American people understand that and wanted to cut it by 31%. Two-thirds of respondents chose to cut the defense budget, in other words. Funds for Iraq were cut by an average of 35%, again with two-thirds of respondents opting for cuts. 61% of respondents chose to put aside money for deficit reduction, which I wouldn't do. I would just restore all these taxes on the wealthy, make them pay the decent share of it, and that would take care of that. I'm not going to put aside any of this for deficit reduction. They ought to pay it. We had a surplus until Bush cut the taxes on the wealthy. Education spending increased by 39% of the respondents. Funds for job training increased by 263%. Bush, of course, is cutting it to nothing. Funds for medical research increased by 53%. Veteran benefits were increased by 40%. You've got to remember, Bush is cutting these. Funds for conservation and the development of renewable energy were increased by 1,090%. Bush, again, wants to keep us on oil. That's what the war in Iraq is all about, gaining control of oil. We know that we got to get out of there. we got to get this poisonous substance that's polluting the air, that's causing the maybe catastrophic harm to the planet. And we know that we've got to find renewable sources. And so that's why the people that responded to this poll were willing over 1,000% increase. 70% of respondents opted for increases in this area. Now, you say, well, Republicans and Democrats. In many cases, both groups were opposing the current budget, just to different degrees. While Republicans, this is according to the study from the University of Maryland, while Republicans on average cut the Pentagon budget. This is the Republicans want to cut the Pentagon budget, $70 billion. Democrats cut it by $166 billion. Republicans cut the Iraq supplemental budget by $17.8 billion. Democrats cut it by $37.8 billion. Both increased education. Republicans only increased it a meager 7.2. Democrats increased it by almost $40 billion. On the environment and natural resources, Republicans increased this by $4 billion. Democrats by $14 billion. Republicans increased job training, and on and on. So here you have almost across the board. Let's see. It does just go on and on. This is the University of Maryland. So you hear what I'm saying? The American people, including the Republicans, and this has got to include conservatives, think that that Bush Co. is just that, Bush Incorporated, that does not have any interest in the American people or our welfare, but instead solely exists as a racket to take our tax dollars and turn it over to their rich buddies and corporations that back them. That's all it is about. It is about nothing else, even to the point where Republicans feel the same way. So, hearten up, folks. That's good news. But how do we make it so? That's the real question. All right, I'm Peter Werbe. This is the Night Call Show, 313-298-WRIF. Here's Dave in Dearborn. Dave, thanks for waiting so patiently.
Hey, no problem. I can't talk tonight. I'd like to talk about the Terri Schiavo case.
Sure.
Briefly.
Sure.
I'm a paramedic. I've been a paramedic for 7 years, so I deal with life and death every day. I've had patients like this, and I think for me, the way I deal with it, it'd be easier just to let them go for the family, also for the cost. And as far as Bush and his brother, since I live in Florida, both taking this pro-life stance, the sanctity of life, Bush and his brother didn't think that when they were signing death warrants as governors.
Yeah, sure. And do you say you live in Florida now?
No, I moved down to Florida for a couple of years. I actually lived in the city next to where the Terri Schiavo case happened.
Okay.
And I moved back, and I've been, keeping track of it. But
let me ask you a question, Dave. When you say you're a paramedic, like an EMS, that kind of thing?
Right.
Okay. This is totally shocking to me. A friend of mine was a paramedic. He was a Teamster. And I somehow had visions of him making $35, $40 an hour for this incredible work. That's quite an exaggeration, isn't it?
Well, that depends.
Tell me some good news.
If you work for a city, Detroit EMS, I've got a friend who's a paramedic there, and after 3 years with no overtime, you're at $50,000.
Well, and well that it should be.
But as in the private companies, I don't work on an ambulance anymore. I work in like a nursing home type center.
Uh-huh.
I make more than my friends who are working on the private ambulances like Community or AMR. Because the classes they have are pumping out so many EMTs and so many paramedics. We're not in, demand like we used to be.
Yeah, he was making $9 an hour as a unionized Teamster.
Right. And and they're working 12-hour shifts.
Right, right.
And there's a lot of stress. But I had typed up my living will a couple nights ago at work. I showed it to my wife. And I put in there that my wife's my patient advocate because in Michigan they... living will is not valid. The state won't honor them. And I also put in there that she's my durable power of attorney. And I wrote in there that no government agency, no state, county,
or federal,
state, local, county, or federal agency, organization, or court may decide my end of life fate. And I don't know if that's going to hold up in court or not, but that might be a good idea to put in it.
Well, you know, I agree with you. I don't have one, and I sure should because, well, I mean, no conservative is going to come to my rescue. They're just going to be saying, pull the plug, pull the plug.
Exactly.
And you say, wait a minute, he's going to get better. Pull the plug on Werby.
No.
conservatives, sure.
I got into an argument with a good friend of mine. Now, I've got two children, 10 and 7. And he's totally, you know, leave the plug and whatever. He said, you know, what if that was your daughter? And well, if my, you know, being a father, being a paramedic and seeing what I've seen, if my daughter's like that with no hope of recovery, pull it. You know, I'm not going to prolong her agony or my agony.
Sure.
You know, but that's what really struck me about Bush and his brother. Oh, the sanctity of all life as they're signing death warrants for death row inmates. So
well,
the sanctity of all life.
I mean, even more directly, Bush's budget and led by this corrupt hypocrite, Tom DeLay, in the House of Representatives, they're cutting off funds for nursing homes. They're pulling. They're going to wind up pulling the plug on tons of elderly.
Most people don't know this, but I was on the American Diabetics Association website a couple years ago. I'm type 1 diabetic, and the big insurance companies were pushing Congress to pass laws that, and Bush said he would sign this if it came across his desk, that if these laws pass, Congress or insurance companies will no longer have to pay for insulin, testing supplies, or classes, or anything. And I'm thinking, well, if I start with diabetics, then it's going to be heart patients, then cancer patients, then stroke patients, then high blood pressure patients.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
Bush said he would sign this.
Absolutely amazing. All right, thank you.
You're welcome.
Appreciate your call. Let me get this international call first here. It's Dan from Windsor. Dan, it's Peter Werby. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi, Peter.
Hi.
How's it going?
Good.
First time caller. I just want to make a remark about the religious topic you're talking about the homosexual parade in Jerusalem or whatever.
Well, let me just say that there's supposed to be a pride festival, and for once all the religions finally got together. They found something they could unite around and said that they were opposing any gay pride festival in Jerusalem. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, I just wanted to maybe put a different perspective on there. I'm a recent Christian. I just became a Christian about a year ago after being a lifelong atheist, I guess you could say, and I just want to say that I am completely embarrassed by people like these just because, like, they give such a bad name for Christians, and they just go there, and I want people to know that the people in there who are you call bigots, and I completely agree with you on that one.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they represent Christianity just as much as Bush represents your United States of America. I don't think it's a solid representation of what we stand for, and I feel that, and I'm very sorry that everybody has these opinions about Christianity and Islam, and I just get so, like, embarrassed. But it's just at the same time, where would we be, like, if we didn't argue, you know?
Well, I was saying, before how the ambivalence I had. On one hand, I just think how much I hate religion, and then everywhere in my personal life, I run into some of the best people, which are, you know, that belong to religions. And I was thinking, a friend of mine's parents, their son, neither of their sons are gay, but they're active in, what church? I can't remember what church they're in. Well, I mean, something like Lutherans or Methodists or something like that. And they go to these conferences to make the church gay-friendly. Or there's any number of churches in the Detroit area that have gay memberships.
And I completely agree with that.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
I'm going to say I sin, you know, everybody sins just as much, you know, like who am I to say, you know, I don't let them in church my church doors, and then at the same time I go out and I live just as bad of a lifestyle as anyone else, you know, it's just, you can't just judge like that, and I get really mad when all these religious
people are out
there. And
Dan, you want to hear some real, you'll think of probably real arrogance? You want to hear, you ready?
Oh, I'm ready.
I don't sin. I mean, I'm not religious, so maybe some of the things that I think, or maybe even some of the things, well, I don't think that I do, but think that some of the things I've done would be sinful, but in some religious terms. But I don't think I'm a sinful person. That's one of the reasons I don't like the stories of most of these organized religions, is they say that we are in these inherently flawed creatures, whereas I don't think so. I think we, that's the difference. There's always been this debate, as you may know, does Does essence precede existence, or does existence precede essence? In other words, what I believe, you're born as a blank slate into a particular culture, you take on those forms and you define yourself. In many of the religions, including Christianity, your essence is predetermined because you've fallen because of the sin of Adam and Eve.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a fan of that.
That's right. I personally don't blame you for that, and obviously our beliefs are going to conflict on that. But I just wanted to say about how can Christians and Jews and Muslims unite and talk about unity when I just don't understand. Like, the Christians must be more against Muslims than the homosexuals in Jerusalem. You know, it's just like, how can you unite with Muslims and Jews and then to go against something that, you know, it's
the enemy du jour.
Yeah.
Dan, thanks for making our show international.
Oh, no problem.
All right, appreciate it. Here's just a little, you know, I mean, I don't know if this is exactly where our money's going. You know, we're usually every week here on the Night Call Show read something about how we're getting ripped off. But I guess this is an example of what they call nepotism. You know that word, nepotism? This means that corrupt political officials dole out money to their family. And here's what's happening. Bush names Cheney Kin to legal post. President Bush has nominated the vice president's son-in-law, Philip J. Perry, as the general counsel of the Homeland Security Department, where he would oversee 1,500 lawyers who work on legal matters like Coast Guard, maritime laws, and immigration. So Bush is nominating Cheney's son-in-law, the husband of one of his daughters, to be the general counsel of the Homeland Security Department. That in itself, see, one of the things, unless your arrogance as a politician, the way that many get because they feel they can do anything, they can't be challenged, and Bush has gotten away with so many things, I guess you would think he figures he could get away with a small corruption like that. Really, you don't want politicians doing anything or any elected official or in governmental process that even gives the appearance of impropriety. Because here's the thing. If there was any, I mean, how many people are there that could be the general counsel of the Homeland Security Department? Right? There's probably thousands of loyal Republicans and what have you. But this gives the appearance of corruption because you're doing it for family. And people know that you're willing to overcome perhaps the limitations. I mean, and this guy seems like a high-powered character, so I'm sure he's competent in one sense. But it gives at a minimum, the appearance of corruption. And, of course, at worst, is corruption. So Bush has nominated the vice president's son-in-law. And again, you know, I ask conservatives, is this a lie? I mean, we know it's not a lie. We know it's not a lie. We know that he's actually nominating him. But is this okay? Is this okay with you? Okay. Anyways, Perry, who's married to Elizabeth Cheney, is leaving the Washington office of the Latham & Watkins law firm, where he was a partner, as well as a lobbyist for Lockheed Martin, one of the top 10 contractors for, guess who? The Homeland Security Department. Come on! This is not a government. It's a racket. And we're sitting here being fleeced of the money that we make, working harder and harder, exhibiting more and more anxiety of whether we're going to have a job, whether we're going to have a damn economy. And Bush is naming Cheney's son-in-law to head a department that the guy used to be a lobbyist for one of the top contractors. Lockheed Martin and its partners have won hundreds of millions of dollars worth of commitments in the last 2 years for products and services it sells, including a contract to train airport security screeners for Transportation Security Administration. One of these days, we've got to talk about what a racket all this Homeland Security is and how this is another way that they could justify fleecing us for hundreds of millions, billions, billions and billions of dollars, the way the Cold War fleeced us. If confirmed, Perry will not be the only member of Cheney's family working for the administration. Elizabeth Cheney, the vice president's daughter and Perry's wife, was appointed last month by Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice as the second-ranking United States diplomat for the Mideast. I mean, these people literally have no shame whatsoever. Where I was looking for one other thing, I don't think I can find this right now. Let's go back to Our phones. Oh, okay. Here's Peyton up in Okemos. Peyton, welcome to the Night Call Show.
Thanks. And have you covered the Codex Alimentarius?
Hey, what? Say what?
It's a bill that's coming through slated for June 1st to limit health supplements.
Yeah, say that again. Actually, I did see something about it, but it's not exactly in my brain. It's Codex
Alimentarius.
Codex Alimentarius. I don't know.
And you can get more information on thepowerhour.com, and they also have some good music for you for the bumper music.
I don't know. You know, I bet I would check on that. Go to Snopes, Snopes.com. And make sure that is really happening.
Snopes, okay.
Snopes.com, because a lot of times, I mean, there's been all this stuff about boycotting some oil companies at the, you know, and that turns out that's a lot of nonsense. Snopes is really good with that stuff.
Okay, thanks.
All right, thank you very much. Just the name of it makes me a little suspicious. There's a lot of, you know, BS that... hangs around. You know, I cannot find this piece that I was looking for. All right. Okay. Here's Alan Inkster. Al, hi. It's Peter Werby. You're on the air.
How are you doing tonight?
Doing good.
I've got some positive news. It's absolutely galling to me as an American to be lectured on a culture of life by a man who made his money as an exterminator and a war criminal.
That'd be, what's his name?
Tom Dillon Bush.
Yeah, you're right.
I think their current stance is going to reach around and bite them in the posterior.
Well, I don't know if you saw my website, but on it says Bush's poll numbers are dropping. Look out, they're going to invent another crisis. So look out for a domestic terrorist attack, or that we'll find out that that we've got to bomb Iran or something like that.
Yeah, the last time his poll numbers hit 45, we had September 11th.
So, that's right. that's right.
What this next one's going to bring, have you heard what they did up in Lansing?
Tell me.
Passing this law
on
doctors and EMTs and others that, you know, if they find out they're treating a gay or somebody that they're morally opposed to, they don't have to treat them.
That's right. Yeah, no, that's amazing. In fact, my system here of stories is finally just... collapse completely. Hey, by the way, let me just tell people, Al, that you can call into 313-298-WRIF. There's some open lines right now.
One last thing after that. It was Jim Hightower that said,
thing
you find in the middle of the road is yellow lines and dead armadillos.
Yeah, I mean, I was broadcasting with him on, it's great, you go to jimhightower.com, and he was formerly a Secretary of Agriculture with in Texas.
Texas, who was done in by Karl Rove.
Yeah, yeah, and Hightower, he I don't know if he's still doing that. He had a talk show, and he was broadcasting from Austin from the Chat and Chew restaurant.
Yeah.
I loved it. All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it, Al. All right. Hey, Jay Hudson, grab those phone calls. I just invited people into... check it out. Maybe it's in here. I'm keep looking. Oh, yeah, it is here. While we're concerned about these world-shaking, and if you're ringing, just keep on ringing, and Jay will get to it. While we're concerned with these world-shaking events, something that we all have to be deeply concerned about and know every single aspect of it and take sides, like the Terry Schiavo situation, this war in Iraq is continuing. And Al-Qaeda's wing in Iraq, this according to Reuters, said on Sunday seven suicide bombers spearheaded its brazen overnight raid on Abu Ghraib that wounded 44 U.S. soldiers. There was this huge firefight there. They say it killed dozens of Americans. I haven't seen anything more on that. Destroyed more than 15 vehicles and shot down an Apache helicopter. I don't know often what to make about these claims. I mean, it's hard. You know, Bushko is just filled with lies. And, I mean, the war began... on the basis of a lie, but this seems a little extreme. U.S. media is reporting 44 U.S. troops were wounded, 12 detainees were hurt, one seriously. The U.S. military said at least one insurgent was killed. There's more than 3,000 suspected insurgents at Abu Ghraib. Remember, that's these people that were tortured. They were only suspected. Most of them had nothing to do with the insurgency. Here, Maureen Dowd, how we got into this in the first place. You may remember that they wanted to figure out how, let me read from Maureen Dowd, the Times. It is absurd to have yet another investigation into the chuckle-headed assessments of Saddam's phantom weapons of mass destruction. That it skirts how the $40 billion a year intelligence was molded and manufactured to fit the ideological schemes of those running the White House and the Pentagon. We don't need a 14-month inquiry producing 601 pages. It cost $10 million to tell us that the data on arms in Iraq was flawed. We know that. When we got over there, we didn't find any. This is the fourth exhaustive investigation that has not answered the basic question. How did the White House and Pentagon spin the information, and why has no one gotten in trouble for it? Maureen Dowd says, when the values, puts that in quotes, when the values president and his aides get in trouble, they're rewarded. Condoleezza Rice was promoted to Secretary of State. Now, Condoleezza Rice ignored all the warnings of the possibility of September 11th. She specifically, at best, gave bad information to the Congress and the nation and the world about weapons of mass destruction. My estimation, she lied purposely. Stephen Hadley, Condi's old deputy, was promoted to National Security Advisor. Bob Joseph, a National Security aide who helped shovel the uranium hooey into the State of the Union address, is becoming an Undersecretary of State. Paul Wolfowitz, who painted the takeover Iraq as such a cakewalk that our troops went in without the proper armor or backup, will run the World Bank. George Tenet, who ran the CIA when Al-Qaeda attacked and when Saddam's mushroom cloud gained credibility, got the Medal of Freedom. Does she say the obvious after this? what's the penalty for mistakes of this magnitude? In order to get this information about weapons of mass destruction, our country under George W. Bush depended on a defector who was described as crazy by his intelligence handlers and a congenital liar by his friends. And his code name was Curveball. Curveball. This is why there's over 100,000 Iraqi civilians dead, mostly women and children. That's why there's 1,500 Americans dead and 12,000 with ghastly wounds, because Bush depended on Curveball. Well, of course, it's not like it's an innocent mistake. They wanted to invade Iraq. They intended to invade Iraq even before they cheated their way into office in 2000. They wanted to, they began at that particular time to pump up their sagging poll numbers, but ultimately this is a whole deal about empire. That's going to destroy the United States and set us up for even more attacks. All right, 313-298-WRIF, that's our phone number, and it's Brian in Melvindale. Hi, it's Peter Werby, you're on the air. Hi, talk up for me.
Hey, sorry. I was gonna address the Shiloh case.
Sure, go ahead.
I guess I dare folks to put themselves in her shoes or her family's shoes. I mean, for crying out loud. I mean, how would you like to be there? I mean, that'd be god awful. I mean, that's for starters. I guess.
I don't know what you mean though. I mean, what's I don't understand the point.
I mean, she's obviously a wreck. Not there. I mean, if you think about it, you wouldn't want to live like that, nor would you.
No.
Your parents, your children, or your cousin, your brother, whatnot. You know?
Well, on the other hand, she probably had no concept. I mean, people in that persistent vegetative state do not have any consciousness whatsoever. So she was probably completely unaware of it. It was just this awful internal family feud that was manipulated by all these Christian nuts and these right-wing politicians.
Absolutely. Another thing, I guess I was going to stay on the Shiloh case, but Peter, I'd like to ask you a personal view of a religious question, if you will.
Sure.
I recall in the past I heard an atheist view on your point.
Yeah.
In regards to the Shiloh case, I mean, what happens to somebody like that who is obviously innocent, whatnot. I mean, what are your views on what happens to her after death? I mean, truly.
I don't know. I don't think anything would happen to her any more than anything else that dies. The electrical impulses or whatever that animates animals, including us, stops, and all the processes stop. Yeah. Your call, actually, I had the quality. I don't know if you're on a cell phone or what, but just isn't good enough to continue, unfortunately, Brian. All right, talk to you later. Let's see. Should I just grab this one? Okay, we'll do that. Luther and Troy, hi. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, Peter. How are you doing?
Doing good.
Good. Did you catch anything, any of the coverage last night, what happened on the streets in East Lansing after the state basketball game last night?
No, I missed it.
It was pretty interesting.
Not another Michigan State riot.
No, not even. It looked like a preemptive strike, actually, on the students.
What happened? Tell me about it.
The only channel that covered it was 4.
Yeah.
And they covered it for pretty long and delayed their other programming. They had a ton of those fully armed, you know, robo-cops, you know, shooting off tear gas and everything, just into random crowds where no violence was happening, but it was disturbing to me, very disturbing. They had like 3 reporters, you know, calling in from different. The reporters had to all take cover in numerous different places, and were calling into the station all like kind of crying and choking, coughing, whatever, because the tear gas was just all over the place. They're like shooting off like 100 rounds. You know, and
well, they've had bad. I'm not defending them in the slightest. It sounds like inappropriate use of force. But I guess they, you know, they just didn't want some of the repeats of some of the stuff that has happened previously.
Yeah, I can understand that, but it just didn't seem like. I mean, even the reporters and just all that they had, they must have had like 3 helicopters. You know, getting video all over the place, and it didn't look like anything was happening at all, and the streets were pretty clear.
Wow.
They just kept on firing them off. It was pretty wild.
Wow. Well, I'll have to check some of the footage. Thanks for telling us about it.
All right, take care.
Appreciate it. All right, let's see, here's the next caller. In Mount Clemens, it's, what's your name? I'm sorry, I can't...
Teddy. You know, I have just one little vignette. It's nothing about what's been... you've been talking about tonight, because they've said it all for me. I have 2 things I'd like to say real quickly.
Sure.
I was looking at a Newsweek magazine after the election, and I hated that look on Dick Cheney's face. He was looking at Bush like he was saying, boy, we really did it good this time. I just couldn't stand it. But I wanted to mention, too, the little guy that called, a young man who called early in the show and mentioned that a stand-up comedian, Mitch Hedberg, had died.
Yeah.
And I read the paper religiously. Pardon the expression.
Yeah, it's okay.
But I didn't read that. Did it just happen? Or
I don't know, but a number of, I guess, people must be more into comedy than I am, because I never even heard of him.
I've always listened to the Comedy Channel, but now that I can't afford it, I'm on Social Security. You know who has good comedy is Canadian station Saturday night. I mean, anybody that's interested, they have some damn good comedians on there.
Yeah.
But Mitch Hedberg was one of my favorites, and I'm an old lady, but I love all that stuff. But anyway, I'm going to be reading my papers. Maybe I'll find it in there somewhere, because I don't have the internet or anything. So that's all I wanted to say.
Thank you so much for calling.
You say it all.
All right. Thank you very much. 313-298-WRIF, some open lines. Let's see. James in Kenosha, Wisconsin writes into Call Talk. Yes. The caller volume is too low to my ears. Peter is at least twice as loud as the callers. Turning up the volume to hear the callers means a whole lot of Peter in my living room. I don't know what to do. I mean, I'm trying to, it is a technical problem. I'm just sorry about that. I'll talk to our engineers again as well. All right. I got to go back to another screen here, and then we will go to, Adam's listening in Romulus. Hi, Adam. It's Peter Werby.
Hi, Peter. Thank you for making my Sunday nights, first of all.
Well, thank you.
But,
first little statement I'd like to make here is that the conservatives, they blow my mind. They've totally taken over the media. Not only does Rupert Murdoch, an incredible conservative icon, if you will, run Fox, and by the way, he's Australian, that's why they see Fox in Australia.
Oh, yeah, well, hello, I guess that makes sense.
Uh-huh.
Well, let me just say something. I don't know how this sounds to the callers now, but I've tried to put both our volumes up, and my voice, compared to yours, just sounds terrible. If I take it all the way down, then it sounds all right, but this is a bit of a problem, but go ahead, sorry.
Yeah, there was a lot of distortion on your voice there, Peter, but... Hollywood, you know, and the media, these seem to be really, really big targets of the conservatives. The only reason I can see this, other than, you know, the Hollywood and violence and sex and films, maybe some of the religious conservatives have a problem with that, but the only real reason that I see that the conservatives continually attack this is because television and film and music, these are the ways that young people are introduced to new ideas, and I just think that when the conservatives talk about their war on the media, that what they're really talking about is a war on the education of the youth. I mean, for instance, I just went to see a film this weekend. It just opened. Extremely violent. A lot of sex in it.
Sin City?
I'm sorry?
Sin City?
Yes, yes, exactly.
Yeah.
One of the things I found very interesting about that movie is that all of the real, if you will, bad guys in the film are either politicians or religious leaders. And, you know, it's interesting, but I bet you if there's a lull in... the typical sort of filler fodder, Shivo-esque cases, that we're going to see a big conservative outcry against this film, just like we did with, Natural Born Killers, let's say.
One of the things I was reading a little review of Sin City. I think it said there is like a crucifix in almost every scene.
Oh, yeah, nearly. One of the main, if you will, villainous characters in the film is played by Elijah Wood, and he plays a cannibal who is an intense Christian. In one scene, you see him sitting outside reading the Bible or whatnot. But Rutger Hauer also plays a bishop or cardinal who is Kevin's mentor and eats the prostitutes that Kevin murders with him. It's really fascinating. Also, all the heroes are criminals in the film.
I think I'm gonna miss this film. But I was thinking about that today. How many serial killers do you think are liberals?
I doubt there are any liberal serial killers.
Yeah, exactly.
You always hear that they're a religious fanatic or a Nazi or some other type of... We had one here in Detroit that dumped bodies at the Monterey Motel about 15 years ago. They called him the Angel of Death. It's amazing he got any press at all because he was an African-American and most of his victims were, too. But they always have that God is speaking to them and telling them to do this. It's amazing to me that people don't see this. I mean, the kids in Columbine were, real sort of off the edge sort of right wing fanatics as well. You see it over and over again. Liberal minded people aren't the violent extreme sort of people. You see this sort of stuff from the conservative.
You got it.
All the time.
Thank you, Adam.
Thank you.
Appreciate your call. Jay Hudson, pick up some of those phone calls, please. Let's see here. It is Danielle, is it, in Clinton Township? Hello. Maybe I didn't do this. I guess I didn't. Hi, there you go. You're on the air.
Hey, Peter, how you doing?
Is it Danielle?
Yeah.
Hi, you're on the air.
Hey, how you doing tonight?
Good.
Well, pretty much, I just wanted to ask a question about the judge appointments that are looking to take place. I gave to the move.com, or I'm sorry, the moveon.org community when when Kerry was being elected, or when Kerry was running for election and Bush ended up winning. And they're sending me emails now about these judge appointments that the Republicans are looking to do so that they can kind of overrun the courts and start running everything.
Sure.
You know, how really, as one citizen in the United States, you know, how do we fight against this? I mean, how do you take away the appointment proposition from that part of the government? How do you keep the judicial and how do you keep the judicial branch separate from the rest of the government so that the checks and balances still work
well
out?
That's why a conservative judge was so critical of Bush, with this whole intrusion of the executive branch and the legislative branch into judicial decision making, and because it totally erodes the concept of separation of powers. Now, the problem is that the right wing, although they represent a small minority of the population, is so well financed and so well organized that they've been able to shove this right wing agenda down the throat of the American people. The Democrats don't stand up to them very much, and have allowed they object to six or eight of these far right wing cuckoo birds getting in to federal judgeships. I mean, men and women that are absolutely unqualified to sit there. On the other hand, they've approved about 200 judges. So we're going to have a judiciary that's staffed with far right wingers and conservatives. Something like, for instance, Clinton and Gore did not do. They put in moderates. Before, the Republicans never would have approved even liberals, let alone say like progressive judges. So, I mean, we almost have to start over again. The American people, and being part of online groups like MoveOn.org is good enough as far as it goes if we're kind of isolated. But, for instance, I don't know if you heard me announce like a couple of events that are occurring, unfortunately, kind of far from you. One's in Royal Oak this coming Wednesday, where there's going to be a showing of the film Weapons of Mass Deception at 7:45 at the main theater. And I'm going to introduce part of the program. And then on Saturday in Royal Oak, at St. Joseph's on the corner of Woodward and 11 Mile Road, there's going to be a teach-in about the war in Iraq. And it's going from like 9:30 to 4. Tom Hayden is going to speak. And these are the kind of community events that we can start if they're not supported, that is by attendance, people are going to go, well, it's hopeless, and just keep watching Fox News and maybe every 4 years go out and vote for the lesser of the two evils.
Right.
And so it's important that people turn out for these things. I mean, I look at the hits, like on my website, that's almost 350,000, and how many people listen to this broadcast across Detroit and all that, and then compare it to how many people actually come out to things. And I'm sorry, I don't mean to like be grabbing people by the lapels and saying, how come you're not coming out here? But these events are interesting. It puts you together with people that think similarly. And all of a sudden, if you're just sitting watching Fox News or CNN, you're thinking, I'm the only person in the world that has any objection to this. And you're sitting there getting fed this load of BS. Whereas opposed to having your beliefs and your vision of a different kind of America reinforced and affirmed by people that think similarly. I mean, that's one of the values of coming out to these things.
Right. So, well.
And you go to my website.
Right.
By the way, yeah. If you didn't catch all of the times and the dates, they're on my website. All right. Thank you.
Hey, thank you.
All right. In fact, Tom Hayden, the keynote speaker, is my guest in about 15 minutes here on WRIF. Let's just take these three calls, Jay Hudson, and then we'll go to our recorded programming. Hi, it's James in Westland. Hey, James, it's Peter Werby.
Hi, Tom. Oh, no, yeah, I'm Peter. My bad. There's four quick things I want to get to real quick. First, there's still no music or no feed on hold.
When you're on hold. Yeah, I don't know. Go ahead. All right, we're going to check with our engineer.
Okay. Second thing, Terry Schiavo.
Yeah.
Dead. Let it go. This is the last week I want to hear anything about it.
I promise you from my end there will be no more.
Thank God, because I'm about to go crazy.
Okay.
Okay.
Three?
Third thing, the weapons of mass destruction. Bush was looking in the wrong place. I know where they are.
Where are they?
In our backyard.
Well, we've got the weapons. You're right.
Yeah, I mean...
Fourth?
In fact, I read somewhere that there's supposed to be, like, this treaty signed with Russia that we're supposed to cut down the nuclear weapons, like, by a couple years ago.
Yeah, and Bush refused it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he won't sign the comprehensive nuclear test ban, and they want to create new generations of nuclear weapons, which scares the piss out of Russia and China, who respond then the way they did during the Cold War, of creating more. And all we got to do is get some people in Russia or China that have the same mentality as these nuts running the Bush administration, and we could be in some trouble. Tell me your fourth quickly, James, because I got to go.
Yeah. Also, I want... really try to fight censorship of video games, music, comics, you know, anything like that, because truthfully, that type of media has been getting a bad rap as of late, especially with the shootings in Minnesota, was it?
Yeah, where they were watching. Yeah, yeah.
I'm just sick of all the media that I love and my friends love getting attacked when it should be the parents' responsibility to center that stuff for themselves, to filter the bad stuff out for their kids.
And in general, to keep kind of a sense of what's happening to their kids. I mean, how could a kid be on the road to mass murder and the parents not know? All right, James, thanks for calling. I appreciate it. Let's see here. It's Bruce writes in to calltalkyes@yahoo.com. I think the left is full of values, but how can we communicate that? Well, we need our own media, for one. Zappa for president, shout out to the chat room. All right, people listening at tomhartman.com. First time, let me see what this, these are always good. First time listener. Leamington, Ontario, very nice city. Let's see, I was driving home, dropping off my girlfriend, and turned on WRF. Usually don't listen late at night, so therefore I didn't know that there was a call-in show, but it's odd because I listen to 101 every day. I have it on. The point is that right away I was so intrigued by your thoughts, especially on religion, mostly because they're exactly like mine, and the more I listen, the more I agreed with you. But this is the first time I've heard your show, and I'm already hooked. Ryan, listening in Leamington, the home of Heinz Ketchup in Canada, you know, by Point Pelee. My wife and I go there very frequently. Love it. So a big shout out to Leamington. And let me see. That's interesting. This show's been on the air for 35 years, and some people, you know, we sometimes think there's a continuity, but people sometimes hearing it for the very, very first time. One more. Yeah. Pete asked, do you think the price of gas is caused by Bushco? Well, his buddies are making record profits. In other words, if it was just at the barrel price, which was about $57 a barrel now, if they were correspondingly raising the price, just what they were paying for, you know, at the pump or the barrel, they would make the same amount of profits. But all of these companies are ripping us off. It's pure and simple. And Bush is doing absolutely nothing about it. Now, one more I want to get. This is again from Tony in Australia. Thanks for the low over the air. Yes, we have Fox News down here. It's part of our major cable company called, believe it or not, Foxtel, owned by Rupert Murdoch. Our Prime Minister, John Howard, follows the Bush bandwagon like a lost puppy, including Iraq. It's totally pathetic when George calls little Johnny jumps. Caller's a little down on audio to you, but on air, but still okay. Well, I've been trying to pump it up. Okay. Let's go back and get our last couple of callers, beginning with Erica, who's out at Wolverine Lake. Erica, where is Wolverine Lake? Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Where's that? Where's
Wolverine Lake? If you're familiar with, like, the Wild Lake area.
Sure.
Commerce, I'm in that general area.
Okay. And that's is that a town, Wolverine Lake?
It's actually the village of Wolverine Lake.
Sounds cool.
Very small.
Although, Wolverines
good place to live.
Wolverines are terrible animals, aren't they?
Yeah, but we're right on the lake, though, so it's all good.
Okay, what's up?
I was just listening, and I heard a couple of people that were saying, you know, they're sick of hearing about the Terry Shiloh case and everything, and it's been somewhat ridiculous how the media has just exploited it, but I look at it this way. It's a total wake-up call for us, you know, that are married, getting married, to take a look at, you know, what we're faced with down the line. I don't understand how Michael was so, you know, interested in his wife and how he wanted to carry out all her wishes, and yet he had already had started another life with his girlfriend and had a family.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that just seemed like a whole conflict of interest. And, you know, it's something that we really have to take a look at and just see what the heck's going on, especially with the way our judicial system reacted, the president, our congresspeople, and society as a whole.
Well, according to other callers, this is the last week we can do it. So I thank you for your comments. And join us again, because I don't know if you heard earlier, but one woman about 40 minutes into the show said, hey, I'm the first woman that called. So I don't know whether women don't like me or it's mostly men that listen, but please call us again.
I will do. Thank you.
Thank you, Erica. Bye now. All right. Here's our final caller. It's Raul from Novi. Raul, hi. You're on the air.
Hi, Peter. I just got out of Sin City about a half hour ago.
Uh-huh.
And I was wanted to echo the earlier caller's thoughts. It's really a great movie. It's very educational because it does portray the political and other elite leaders of the area as morally corrupt to the degree of evil in the film. And I think people should check the movie out just because it is unfortunately an all too realistic example, especially when they have the supposed Christians, you know, being cannibals and capable of various crimes. You know, people like Bush and even John Kerry purport to be Christians, but obviously you can't be when you're in charge of such activities as they are, like starting wars.
Yeah, that's
things
it.
Like that.
It's interesting, too, that Sin City was the top grossing film this weekend.
Yeah. And also, of all the people Bush oversaw the execution of, there was only one person he gave a stay of execution to, and that was Henry Lee Lucas, the notorious serial killer. There's a good book called The Politics of Serial Murder, which kind of lays out these political connections between serial killers and Republicans, and also Democrats, too.
Wow.
I think readers should check it out. It's so you should go see that movie. It is, unfortunately, a realistic example of something that happens in our society.
All right, thank you so much. Thanks for being our last caller. All right, stay tuned. Tom Hayden's next.
You're listening to WRIF.com.
It's everything a man could want. Women, motorcycles, sports, beer, and me! Hey guys, Tom May from Revenge of the Telemarketers, and I am hosting 101 WRIF's 4th Annual Motor City Man's Expo, Saturday, April 2nd from 11 till 6 at the Novi Expo Center, sponsored by Dodge.
Join the Rips, Drew, and Mike broadcasting live. Meet Kip and Pedro from Napoleon Dynamite.
Your mom goes to college.
Brought to you by the mortgage experts at Rock Financial, Red Wings' Darian Hatcher and Darren McCarty, along with Grinder, plus Detroit Lion Kevin Jones. Meet Playboy Playmates Kimberly Holland and Pilar Lastra.
Check out sweet rides, bikes, electronic sports, music, entertainment, and so much more, dude. Register to win over $10,000 in prizes. And check out the bikini contest or tip back a cold one at the Miller Lite Sports Lounge.
The 2005 Motor City Men's Expo. Saturday, April 2nd at the Novi Expo Center. Admission is just $7. Click on WREF.com for a special discount admission coupon. Sponsored by Dodge. Grab life by the horns. Motor City Golf Warehouse. Motor City Harley Davidson. Napa Auto Parts. Miller Lite. And 101 WREF.
Poker enthusiasts. MDA hosts their first annual Texas Hold'em Tournament. Call 586-274-9000 to secure your seat at the Men's Expo.
Panchero's Mexican Grill. Get yourself some. That's the sound of fresh dough being pressed into homemade tortillas. Panchero's builds your burrito by filling the homemade tortilla with fresh ingredients right before your eyes. Your choice of steak, spiced pork, chicken, or freshly grilled marinated vegetables. Add vegetarian beans, rice, Panchero's award-winning salsas, and fresh guacamole. Now that's a burrito. Fresh, delicious, and bursting with flavor. So grab the family or friends and get yourself some. Burritos made fresh at Panchero's Mexican Grill. Panchero's, it's good. Panchero's, it's fresh. Panchero's, it's for you. Get yourself some.
Come taste for yourself.
at the newest Poncheros location in Livonia at 6 Mile Road in Hagerty. This is WRIF.com.
You've searched today like every other day for those annoying reading glasses. Now you don't have to, as Dr. Combati and the Lake Laser Eye Center have a brand new procedure for you called CK to throw away those reading glasses. It's a safe, simple, 5-minute procedure for only $10.99 or $33 per eye per month. Just log on to www.ucmore.com or call 1-877-UC-MORE. That's 1-877, the letters U-S-E-E-M-O-R-E, to get rid of those annoying reading glasses.
Tired of low-priced LASIK ads that promise a great price only to find out that it actually quadruples when you go there? Well, you'll never have that experience with Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center. You get the latest technology and the most personalized care from Dr. Combati. Only $9.99 per eye or $33 per eye per month. No gimmicks or games here. Log on to www.ucmore.com or call 1-877-UC-MORE for your free consultation. That's 1-877, the letters U-S-E-E-M-O-R-E.
There are so many choices in mortgages these days. For the first-time homebuyer and even for experienced homeowners looking simply to refinance, searching for a mortgage can be a frustrating and confusing time. Why not let Financial Independence Mortgage make your financing search easier? Financial Independence Mortgage provides you with all the relevant information about mortgages and will find you the perfect mortgage to fit your personal needs. It's as simple as filling out a one-page application, and Financial Independence won't make you wait long for your approval. Typically, you'll get a response within 24 hours. Get a free quote from all of the top lending institutions so you know you have a fair comparison of what's available to you on the market. You simply can't find a better, more thorough, more personalized way to ensure yourself of getting the best mortgage at the best rate possible. Competitive rates, very fast closing times, and Financial Independence Mortgage can handle exactly the type of mortgage to fit your personal needs, whether or not you have some blemishes on your credit. Find out today the difference Financial Independence Mortgage can make for you at 248-594-7582. That's Financial Independence Mortgage at 248-594-7582.
One WRIF and the beautiful Leopards Lounge Girls. This and every Tuesday night for your chance to win tons of free riff gear, tickets to cool stuff, and, well, let's just say special attention from the smoking hot Leopards Lounge babes. Guys, you work hard. You deserve a night out. So why not make it riff night this Tuesday night? Sit back and enjoy the finer things in life. You know what I'm talking about. Beer, sexy, beautiful women from all around the world, and tons of free stuff. It just doesn't get any better than this. Don't miss the fun this Tuesday night with 101 The Riff at Leopards Lounge in Windsor. Just 5 minutes from the bridge or tunnel at 1190 Wyandotte West. Call 1-888-653-8881 for Leopard's Lounge and Broil, where the party never stops. Transportation provided by Royal Limousine in Plymouth. Call 866-5-ROYAL.
Now, Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's your host, Peter Werby.
All right, thank you very much, and welcome back. Just want to remind you this before we get into our interview with Tom Hayden. Hockey may still be on hold, but great music rocks on. Miller Lite at WRIF present VIP show number 4 with 3 days, Grace, Shinedown, and Seether. That's going to be April 28th at the Masonic. The only way to get in is to win, so listen for your chance to walk in free. It's VIP show number 4 with 3 days, Grace, Shinedown, and Seether. That's April 28th at the Masonic, brought to you by Miller Lite. Great taste, less filling, good call at 101 WRIF. All right, here's our interview. Thank you very much for joining me. It's a pleasure to welcome someone back who was just on our program not so long ago. Tom Hayden, who was the author, is the author of Street Wars and the Future of Violence, one of 9 books that Tom Hayden has written. A prolific author, also political activist, former California state legislator, and graduate of Royal Oak Don Darrow High School. Tom Hayden, an old friend, is going to be in town for a teach-in on Iraq. It's a community teach-in. It's going to be this coming Saturday, April 9th, 9:30 a.m. to 4 p.m. at St. John's Episcopal Church, Woodward at 11 Mile Road in Royal Oak. Tom Hayden, welcome back to the Peter Werby Show.
I'm glad to be here and looking forward to coming home.
Yeah. Were you thought of as a troublemaker in high school?
Yeah, I got into trouble.
Okay, you let it go with that. Didn't you? Isn't there some famous... You did something with the yearbook or the last issue of the newspaper, the Don Darrow High School?
Yeah, I was manipulated by older people into saying something profane in the last editorial I wrote, and so I was allowed to graduate without cap and gown.
Really?
And told that I could erase my record in 5 years.
And what, if I remember,
I think
it,
they expected me to just go into further and further trouble. Anyway, I never came back in those 5 years passed, and I guess the record is still stained.
Well, you've had a...
At-risk youth.
Yes, an incredible history in the civil rights movement in the South, organizing in the North, and many of the other things that I think that most people know about. But you were just in town on Friday, I think it was the 25th of March, to commemorate, talking about teach-ins, the 40th anniversary of the first Vietnam teach-in at the University of Michigan. What was that like? Was it?
Yes, I thought it was important that the students, very creative bunch of students, came up with the idea of memorializing the first one, which was a huge event back in 1965. They wanted to focus on issues of today, of course, and I think that it was successful. They had speakers, and then they had workshops that lasted until midnight or beyond, and I was glad to be there.
Now, you were a student activist at the University of Michigan. In fact, that's
at the university. I was the editor of the Daily.
Mm-hmm. And that's where we met long ago and not so far away. But and you were not at the first one, right? You had already left the
university. No, I was out of the university. So this was purely a teach-in on the war in Iraq and the dangers of empire. Set on the date of the first one 40 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Now you're
there were a few people there who came in for it or who had never left. Al Haber, Marshall Solins, various people.
Marshall Solins, the famous anthropologist. Boy, I'm glad to know he's still around.
Singer.
Yeah, well, that's great. This community teaching on Iraq, I mean, people don't even seem to talk about Iraq anymore. We're all caught up with the Shivo case, for instance.
Is that right? Well, I suspect that beneath the surface, Iraq is there on people's minds. It's billed as a teach-in, Peter, but I think that I'm coming out to direct a workshop in how to be effective in budging Congress on the issue of Iraq in order to end the war. So we'll talk about Iraq, but the emphasis in my mind is organizing. There was this great group of people who apparently have leafleted, have gone door to door in Huntington Woods, Royal Oak, a few other towns, and they want to build kind of a permanent neighborhood presence at the precinct level.
Mm-hmm.
And so it will not just be talk. It will be designed for people to have an impact.
Now, this, when we talk about budging or nudging Congress, I mean, this is a goal pretty far down the line from, you know, immense social change that we often spoke about. And I wonder if it has any more chance than it had, that for a few generations of activists and reformers. That is essentially transforming the Democratic Party from just another party into at least an opposition party. Do you see any hope in that?
Yes, I think wars always end, unlike some problems that seem chronic. And it's true that after they end, other wars start up again. But the question is how long this madness in Iraq has to go along, and what contribution people at the neighborhood level can make to ending it. It's already unpopular. I think 55% of the population says it's unwarranted. 25% of the voters, that's 40 million people, say we should get out. $1 billion a week, you can translate that into four-year scholarships at the University of Michigan, which are unfunded or anything you may wish to translate it into, but that's a lot of money. the American dead are understated. I think the number is around 1,500 and climbing, but that does not include several hundred Americans who work for private security contractors and companies like Halliburton. And contrary to all the propaganda that got the country caught up, the war is far from over, and there's no exit strategy. So I think that there are several things that can be done. One is the recruiting crisis. The armed services have had a very difficult time making their quotas, and a lot of people are trying to organize delegations to go to high schools and talk to families about the right for both sides to be heard before the recruiters go in there and pluck out more young people for an uncertain venture. Over 30 recruiters, by the way, are AWOL.
Huh, really?
You know, yeah. Huh. There's 6,000 AWOL generally in the armed services, but it even includes recruiters. They're under tremendous strain. The role Congress plays is twofold. One, they pay for the whole thing with your tax dollars, and secondly, they can and occasionally do hold hearings that highlights an issue, like the systemic torture that has occurred from Afghanistan to Guantanamo to Baghdad. And when the Congress holds hearings, the media covers the war. So I do think whether the Democrats can be an opposition party or not, at least some Democrats, Senator Levin, for example, have a responsibility to speak out, because that's the only way that the coverage continues and the issue doesn't go away. And with Vietnam, you will remember that there was a do-nothing Congress that let it start.
Mm-hmm.
There were only two people that voted against it in 1964. But at the end, the Congress terminated all funding, all military funding. That's not because the Congress woke up and changed its inner nature or something like that. It's just because the country tired of the war.
My guest is Tom Hayden. His website is tomhayden.com. You can see a list of his books, his other projects as well. He's going to be here in Detroit Saturday, April 9th at a teach-in. You can go to my website, peterwerby.com, for information on it under my community calendar, and I will certainly give more details as we progress. And Tom, one of, how can I frame this best. You need a political and social self-confidence to make change, and that certainly doesn't seem very present on the left among liberals or progressive or leftists. In fact, you talk to a lot of people, I'm sure you've heard it 100 times, oh, this is Jesus land now, the conservatives run everything, we the whole country is against us. And even when you remind them some of the things that you said, Bush's approval ratings down to 43%, as you said, 55% of the people thinking opposed to the war, and on and on and on. Yet it doesn't feel like that. It feels like we're up against this enormous enemy that controls everything. How do you, when people say that to you, what do you say?
Well, I understand that. I mean, when you're in a fight and you lose, like the election last November, depression sets in. I mean, I counsel people, hey, you're in a depression, get off your meds.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Tom, you're kind of breaking up a bit.
because things go in cycles, and while everything you say is true to an extent, it would be a big mistake to think that it's totally true, because everything these people do is not successful. I mean, they said that Iraq was going to be a cakewalk. It was not. And much of their agenda whips up their constituency, but it does not accomplish their goals. And, I just don't think that they're going to be successful in Iraq. And it's extremely important to save lives and to save money and to save our reputation. And apathy is no hiding place. And I expect the event to be well attended. I came out in January to some Democratic Party meetings. You mentioned that I'd been a senator out here in Los Angeles for many years, and maybe it was that connection. But the turnout was high, and what I noticed was people were getting over their grief and frustration and depression from November, and they were angry, and they're forming a group called Progressive Democrats of America, PDA, which is kind of a group designed to revive the liberal and progressive traditions of the Democratic Party. So some people are down, and other people just have the attitude, hey, keep up.
Mm-hmm. One thing I keep reminding people is that statistically the election was a dead heat. It's not like we're some 20% of the population. When you remove margin for error and other things like electronic voting machines, it sure was about 50-50. It's just that we don't act like it. And here, let me pose this to you. We, rather than the conservatives, have become the great naysayers. And understandably, no to Bush, no to the destruction of Social Security, no to the war in Iraq, and no to the destruction of the environment, yet we've lost what Bush's daddy called the vision thing. In other words, we're not really positing a vision of a different America that is better.
Well, certainly that's right, although preserving Social Security would keep in place the kind of America that I like to live in.
Yeah, sure.
I'm applying for Social Security, so I have a personal stake there. But I think that there is a vision emerging here. I'm not sure it's coming from the Democratic Party, but if you think about a couple of these issues, the war in Iraq poses the question of whether we should have a military outpost there with 15 bases, total of something like 750, 800 bases around the world, military budget that's 90% greater than the second largest, I think that's Russia's, or whether we're building an empire and sticking our chin out and picking fights that will drag a lot more young people and off to war and not solve the problem of terrorism. Secondly, we have CAFTA coming, the Central American Free Trade Agreement, which I'm going to talk about, which is before the Congress in the next month or two, which is NAFTA applied to Central America. And I think people in Michigan are against that sort of thing because they've seen the manufacturing job loss. They've seen investment transferred to cheap labor zones in Central America, South Asia, Latin America, the rest of it. And so this administration is trying to create a global framework that is beneficial to private investors and beneficial to the Pentagon. But at some point, people will be asking, how does this benefit us? Currently, the answer to that is if you're afraid of terrorism, you're supposed to think that these are good things. And maybe there will be another terrorist attack. I don't know. The important people in our society say it's inevitable, which makes me wonder, well, what are they doing with our tax dollars? But if there's not, I think Americans will be reckoning with the costs of empire and the sorrows of empire, the economic effects of empire in these trade agreements. And I think people, that's one of the reasons people in Michigan voted for Kerry, don't you think?
Sure, I do. And I think what's missing to move beyond just the passive act of voting, which I voted for a Democratic Party candidate, John Kerry, for the first time in my entire life. I thought it was that.
Is that right?
Yeah.
A Republican all those years.
Yeah, exactly. Not quite. But anyways, ribbing me is Tom Hayden. He's going to be at a community teach-in on Iraq. It's going to be Saturday, April 9th, 9:30 a.m. to 4 p.m. You can come by at any time. It's going to be at St. John's Episcopal Church, Woodward at 11 Mile Road in Royal Oak. Tom will have no trouble
finding it because he's a Royal Oak Dondero High School graduate. I agree that much of the sentiment is there. Then it has to do, and something you've been involved in, Tom, all your life, is organizing it. And you said one of the things that you admired, as do I, the Huntington Woods Peace Group that's the sponsor of this,
right,
is that they do a lot of door-to-door base community organizing, which I am sure when we mentioned earlier about the 1965 teach-in that you at University of Michigan that you weren't at, you were probably, I can't remember the dates, but in Newark or in the South or somewhere,
right,
organizing. So tell me practical experiences about that, like your own senatorship in California. Did you do anything out of the ordinary from what most candidates and legislators do? Did you have any grassroots organizing?
Yes, I drew a bad card from the deck. So I was in the legislature for 18 years as a Democrat from the west side of Los Angeles, San Fernando Valley, and Republicans held the governorship 16 of those years. So I had a tough go trying to get things signed by governors. I did get 100 bills passed and signed into law, however, and I learned, that if you're a hard worker, you will get your share of wins.
Well, Tom, you're breaking up again. I don't know. Are you on a headset?
No, I'm on a phone.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
It's okay. Now it's okay. Go ahead. So you're talking about.
I found that it's. It's not true that there's a system that's absolutely closed. If you do your job, you will get some wins. And there's other tools at your disposal. The power of investigation, the power of subpoena to hold hearings, the power to hire. I had 15 staff. The power to hire staff, not just to be. Glorifiers of Tom Hayden, but to go out there and help community groups empower themselves.
And what form did that take? I mean, give us some example. I mean, because what we need are examples, models, because everyone, I'm sure, that 99% of the audience listening to us is thinking, yeah, well, gee, how do I do this? Where's the entry point for all of this? Which is, one of them would be this teach-in to hook up with people. But tell us what it was like, some of the examples that you were involved in.
Well, no, let me be concrete, because, I mean, I'm not a poster child for electoral politics. I think there's many other ways to affect social change. But with respect to politicians, I think sometimes we underestimate how we can influence them. For instance, in your state, Senator Stabenow is up for re-election next, and I don't know her, and don't need to really know her to understand fully that she will be extremely sensitive to trends in her district, because politicians are always nervous about their margin of victory and how much money it will take to stay in office and what they have to do to stay in office. And so if she takes the Huntington Woods base for granted, if she takes the anti-war citizens for granted because she wants to move to the center, then you'll wind up with the very politics that you're unhappy with, probably, which is people who say it was a mistake to get into Iraq, but, well, maybe it might be a bigger mistake to get out,
mm-hmm,
right? But if all of a sudden she hears from people in Huntington Woods, Debbie Stabenow, we want you to be better. We want you to stand up for what we believe. And if it's done in ways that are manifest, that are visible, that are clear, she will begin paying more attention, because there's this relationship at election time between politicians and their constituents. And there's all kinds of ways. You can ask for a delegation to meet with her staff. You can try to pass a resolution against Iraq at the Democratic State Convention in Michigan. You can leaflet
areas like Huntington Woods. You can get the list of all the people that gave her $500 or more and write them a letter, get one of them to sign it and say, I gave Debbie X thousand dollars and I want her to take a stronger position against this war in Iraq. It's not enough to keep funding a mistake. Do you agree? If you agree with me, send me a check. And all of a sudden you've got people raising hell among her contributors. You can have guerrilla theater. You can have, we used to have during Vietnam, tiger cages. There were these prisoners who were tortured and held in what were called tiger cages. Now you've got Abu Ghraib. You can have a facsimile of a cage with somebody in it pretending to be an Iraqi prisoner being tortured. From that cage, you can set up in front of the senator's district office and hand out leaflets to people saying you don't want to pay any taxes for torture, etc. Make yourself alive during the course of an election, and you will make politicians responsive. That's all I'm saying. It won't change their nature, but being, you know, out of it, depressed, negative, not doing anything, will guarantee that their behavior becomes worse.
Yeah, and actually, in terms of people that feel like they're just an individual that can't even, at this point, involve themselves in any group or mass activity, simply a phone call after a couple of Debbie Stabenow's terrible votes about the war and confirming, now who did she confirm? I don't want to, one of these, you know, either, yeah, Condoleezza Rice, she voted to confirm. And I just called her office.
Vote for Michigan.
And I called her office and I said, do you expect people like me to vote for her for re-election when she's voting like a Republican? And they said, well, you know, Senator, you know, they said, oh, we'd like to send you their, you know, her statement. I said, I don't want to see her statement. I want her to vote in terms of the constituency that elect her. Well, we'll tell her, you know. So you can make a phone call. Well,
believe me. It's like trying to melt a glacier, I suppose. But if you keep the heat on, people in those offices do get worried.
Mm-hmm.
They do. And think of the alternative. If there's no heat, well, you have sort of a self-fulfilling prophecy that, you know, they become worse. I wish I could offer a more radical formula. I mean, the ultimate would be to, you know, run peace candidates to replace these people in 2006 and a peace candidate for the presidency in 2008. People say that those are hopeless crusades, and I know they're very expensive and very, very difficult, but they put a lot of pressure on. The presence of the anti-war activists in the last presidential election who supported Dean and Kucinich put an enormous amount of pressure on the party. And so there's precedent for complicating the prosecution of a war, or even ending a war by citizen action at the precinct level.
All right, well, we're out of time, and more on this at the community teach-in on Iraq.
Can I just say one other thing?
Sure, sure.
School boards are elected. And that is a very manageable institution. School boards are elected, and people might want to ask the school board whether both sides on Iraq are being presented when recruiters are prowling around the campus.
Mm-hmm. Tom Hayden's
been there's much to do.
My guest, author, political activist, former California state legislator, graduate of Royal Oak Dondero High School. He's going to be home Saturday, April 9th, 9:30 a.m. to 4 p.m. The teach-in will be at St. John's Episcopal Church, Woodward at 11 Mile Road in Royal Oak. You can see all of Tom's project and the books he's authored at tomhayden.com. Tom, thanks for joining me on the Peter Werbe Show.
You're listening to WRIF.com.
Anglers, get ready to kill.
broadcast here live for a big money this year because the WRIF Fishing Championship Series is coming. The series consists of four tournaments this year: walleye, catfish, bass, and muskie. In each tournament, anglers compete for cash and prizes, and the team with the best average finish in the four tournament series will also win $1,500 cash plus the title of 2005 WRIF Great Lakes Fishing Series Champions. After each event, competitors get to kick back and party at Big Al's Sports Bar for the awards and more chances to win prizes from the RIF. The first tournament kicks off on April 23rd at the Lake Erie Metro Park for the WRIF Walleye Championship. The teams start their boats at 6:30 a.m. and will weigh their catch at 4 p.m. Two- to three-person teams compete for thousands in cash and prizes, but one team will finish the day holding the championship trophy. To sign up or to find out about a sponsorship, call 248-591-6841 today or go to WRIF.com to get a registration form. Become the WRIF Great Lakes Fishing Series Champion. Call 248-591-6841 today.
You've searched today like every other day for those annoying reading glasses. Now you don't have to, as Dr. Combati and the Lake Laser Eye Center have a brand new procedure for you called CK to throw away those reading glasses. It's a safe, simple, five-minute procedure for only $10.99 or $33 per eye per month. Just log on to www.ucmore.com or call 1-877-UC-MORE. That's 1-877, the letters U-S-E-E-M-O-R-E, to get rid of those annoying reading glasses.
Tired of low-priced LASIK ads that promise a great price only to find out that it actually quadruples when you go there? Well, you'll never have that experience with Dr. Combati at the Lake Laser Eye Center. You get the latest technology and the most personalized care from Dr. Combati. Only $9.99 per eye or $33 per eye per month. No gimmicks or games here. Log on to www.ucmore.com or call 1-877-UC-MORE for your free consultation. That's 1-877, the letters U-S-E-E-M-O-R.
This is WRIF.com.
Poncheros Mexican Grill. Get yourself some. That's the sound of fresh dough being pressed into homemade tortillas. Poncheros builds your burrito by filling the homemade tortilla with fresh ingredients right before your eyes. Your choice of steak, spiced pork, chicken, or freshly grilled marinated vegetables. Add vegetarian beans, rice, Poncheros award-winning salsas, and fresh guacamole. Now that's a burrito. Fresh, delicious, and bursting with flavor. So grab the family or friends and get yourself some. Burritos made fresh at Poncheros Mexican Grill. Poncheros, it's good. Poncheros, it's fresh. Poncheros, it's for you. Get yourself some.
Come taste for yourself at the newest Poncheros location in Livonia at 6 Mile Road in Hagerty.
And that's the reason Condoleezza Rice won't take my phone calls anymore. Thanks for the question, caller. Hey, it's Biker Bob, answering your motorcycle questions every night, overnight. Let's see, Brian from Berkeley, you're up with Biker Bob.
Yeah, hi, Bob. My bike's making this weird and funny noise. If I could play it over the phone, could you tell me what's wrong with it?
Sure, Bob, fire away. Well, heck, Bob, I know right away what's wrong with your bike. It's not a Harley-Davidson motorcycle. I'd recognize that Harley V-twin anywhere rumbling through town. What's the matter with you, son? Didn't your mom hug you enough? Stop down to our store in Taylor and hear the sweet sound of Milwaukee Iron. All right, we're out of time. Thanks for the question. Listen to us again for more advice on your Harley-Davidson motorcycles.
Biker Bob's Harley-Davidson service department is open 7 days a week. Stop in for while-you-wait oil changes and service with a smile. And maybe even a little bat on the backside.
Biker Bob's Harley-Davidson is in Taylor on Telegraph, just north of Eureka. For more info, you can jump onto that there World Wide Web on any handy-dandy computer at www.bikerbobsharley.com. For a good time and a great ride, hang out at Biker Bob's.
And why?
Have you heard? Wireless Toys is offering no more activation fees.
What? No more activation fees? Did I hear you right?
That's right. You can now get your activation fee reimbursed from Wireless Toys on any new contract for all the service providers. Sprint, Nextel, T-Mobile, Verizon, and Singular Wireless. Visit any of our Wireless Toys locations and find out why we're the fastest growing wireless retail chain in the country. Some say it's because our experts know all the phones, all the packages, and all the deals. Others say it's because we have the largest variety of services at one location. This is a limited time offer, so hurry into any of our 40 Metro Detroit locations or visit us at www.wirelesstoys.com for no more activation fees.
No more activation fees. No more activation fees. Yeah.
millions of men embarrassed by premature performance in bed? I'm Dr. Richard Cohen, MD, men's performance specialist. Premature E is the most common of all sexual issues for men, but now you can prolong your performance and your pleasure with the free 30-day trial of Maxtrol, the new climax control system for men. Maxtrol gives you greater control during intimacy, so you can delay the urge and last longer, which means more pleasure for you and for her. Maxtrol is the confidential, non-prescription way to get the confidence and endurance you want and she needs in bed. I'm so sure of it, I'll send it to you free for 30 days.
Call now and try Maxtrol free for 30 days. You pay only shipping and handling. 1-800-270-9580. 1-800-270-9580. Call now and try Maxtrol free for 30 days. 1-800-270-9580. 1-800-270-9580.
We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for joining us. We've talked any number of times, not so much in general, or not interviewing an author, but in passing, talking about the disgrace that America has up past 40 million Americans who are uninsured. This is the wealthiest country in the world, and I've always thought it a disgrace that we don't offer all of our citizens health insurance as a matter of right, right of our citizenship. Joining me for a discussion on this is Susan Starr-Sarad. The book is Uninsured in America, Life and Death in the Land of Opportunity, and her co-author is Rashika Fernandopoul. And Susan Starr-Sarad is the Research Director of Religion, Health, and Healing Initiative at the Center for the Study of World Religions at Harvard University, and we're talking to her in Boston. Susan Starr-Sarad, welcome to the Peter Werby Show.
Hello, Peter.
Boy, I hope you don't have to have all that on your business card.
It's a lot of words.
It is, but in some ways, it doesn't make a tremendous amount of sense to me. How's that all grouped together, Religion, Health, Healing Initiative? What sort of operation is this at Harvard?
Well, this is a research program that was established to explore the ways in which religion and religious organizations, religious leaders, religious congregations engage in issues having to do with health and sickness and healing. And it's not really that strange a combination. When we think of the great religions of the world, most of their founders were healers. You know, religion deals with suffering and why people suffer and what to do about it, and that's what medicine deals with as well.
Mm-hmm. Oftentimes, of course, there's the what we call faith healing, or people that put too much faith in religion or spiritual beliefs are denigrated by those that want to depend solely on medicine. I'm thinking of this recent Schiavo case.
Yeah. You know, it's hard for me as an anthropologist to say that one side is right or one side is wrong. I do believe that life is sacred. But I guess what I would say is that I believe that everyone's life is sacred, including the life of the domestic worker who doesn't have health insurance, and including the life of the construction worker who no longer can get a job with a union contract because those jobs don't exist anymore in the Midwest, and so he's trying to get by without health insurance, and including the life of my best friend who for 20 years has worked as an adjunct professor at a university rather than being given a tenured position, and that means that she does not have health insurance and she now has breast cancer and is probably going to have to declare bankruptcy. So I think that all these lives are sacred, including Terry Schiavo's.
Yeah. Now, it's funny, when most of us know that figure, 44 million Americans without health insurance, and we sort of understand that it comes with jobs often that aren't that don't have the benefits, because people say, yeah, it's great pay and great bennies. Mm-hmm. But yet a lot of jobs don't have, quote, great bennies. Who winds up without insurance? Is it seems to us it's always the less fortunate, the working poor, some of the working class.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that we can say as a blanket statement that the lower your wages, the less likely it is that you will have health insurance. And, of course, the continuation of that sentence is, the lower your wages, the more likely it is that you're working at jobs that carry physical risks to your body and that are high-stress jobs. So you probably need health care even more than somebody who works at a comfortable job. So that's true. But I think that there's a second reality in our country today, which is that everybody is one pink slip or one illness away from being uninsured. The 40 million people figure is very misleading. That's the number of people who are uninsured on a given day. But if we look at a two-year snapshot of our country, say the last 2 years or, you know, the 2 years before that, one-third of Americans spent at least 1 month without health insurance. So, you know, probably half of Americans are circulating in and out of this category called the uninsured.
Mm-hmm. In your book, Uninsured in America, Susan Sarad, you and your co-author interviewed 120 uninsured men and women and dozens of medical providers, policymakers, and advocates from around the nation. And where does one, I mean, what was the mechanism? How did you begin this process? Where did you find people? You said you had a good friend that's uninsured, but it occurred to me if I had to say, well, gee, I was going to go find the uninsured, where are they?
Well, that's a wonderful question. They're everywhere. But if you want to start, you could walk into convenience stores. You can walk into Walgreens. You can walk into Walmart. You can walk into any of the big retail stores. You can walk into nursing homes. The nurses' aides who are working there will not have health insurance. You can walk onto most construction sites. Construction workers these days tend not to be provided with health insurance. So it's not hard to find uninsured people. I did a lot of my networking at local churches. I did some of my networking online at pharmacies. So it's, in a way, it's easy to find the uninsured. In another way, it was really difficult because despite the fact that so many Americans don't have health insurance, there's a stigma attached to being uninsured. And I found that when I would walk into a sort of semi-public kind of place and start chatting people up and saying, you know, I can offer you a small honorarium, you know, if you don't have health insurance, and you can talk to me about your experiences and how you scrape by, the initial reaction would often be, oh, no, I'm okay, I don't have any problems.
Hmm.
If we would chat longer and some kind of feeling of trust developed, often people would say, you know, I don't have health insurance, but if I go to the doctor and say that, they look at me like I'm a loser. And
yeah.
That's the word I heard over and over again, loser.
That's actually what I was going to bring up, but how do people relate personally to that? Because so often in this country, poor people or people that can't make their bills on their current wages feel that it's an individual failing on their part, is that we know that good and successful people have well-paying jobs and they have health insurance. The opposite is almost a social announcement of the opposite.
You know, I think that's true, and I interviewed people who told me that they used to have health insurance. Maybe a woman who had been married had health insurance, and her husband passed away. She'd had insurance through his employer, so she lost it when he passed away. And she would go back to the same doctor's office she'd been going to for 20 years, and all of a sudden the receptionist and the staff there would treat her differently. All of a sudden she wouldn't be able to get in to see her own family doctor. She would be sent to someone who was just kind of filling in that day. I spoke to people who were hospitalized and saw that on their chart there was a big red sticker that said uninsured or self-insured, something like that, and they just got rotten treatment in the hospital.
How did, I suppose people reacted in a number of different ways, but you said some people were ashamed or embarrassed they didn't have it. Were there people that were angry that thought that they should have it, that this should be actually a right?
That's really interesting. I think some people that I spoke to were angry, and where I heard that anger the most was in the research that I did in the Rust Belt. I spent a lot of time in Decatur, Illinois, and Danville, Illinois, and these are parts of the country that traditionally had very strong labor unions, and people were accustomed to having a good lifetime job at Caterpillar, at Firestone, and they were accustomed to being members of unions, and between the long-term work and the union, they had health care coverage. They've lost that now because these companies have built their plants overseas where they can, you know, pay lower wages and not offer benefits. So these people are now in Decatur and Danville uninsured, and they're angry. That's where I heard a lot of anger, where it's, I think the resting place for that anger is a long history of labor unions and union organizing. In other parts of the country, I heard individual sadness and frustration. I heard people tell me things like, I had to declare bankruptcy because of the medical bills, and I live in a small town, and when I declared bankruptcy, that meant that friends of mine and members of my church who own the grocery store, who, you know, own the shoe store, they're not getting paid. They're not getting the money that I owe them, and I'm embarrassed to walk out of my house. I'm embarrassed to walk down the street of my town.
My guest is Susan Starr Sarad. She's she's the author, co-author of Uninsured in America, Life and Death in the Land of Opportunity. You know, there is a loss of dignity. I mean, I was thinking about that, and it's the way society relates to you when you do when you don't have health insurance.
Mm-hmm. I think that's absolutely true. It's the kind of humiliating reception that one receives, you know, in the doctor's office, in the clinic. It's the kinds of maybe 4-hour, 5-hour, 6-hour wait that one may have at the small number of free and public clinics that exist in this country at this point. And, you know, I think these are wonderful services that exist, but I certainly spoke to people who were ill and who took a day off from work or a half a day off from work to go to the one clinic in their community that offered a sliding fee scale or free services. They could wait the whole day and then be told, doctor's not seeing anybody else today. So there are the constant humiliations, but there's also the humiliation of being sick in a society in which the images that we see of successful people in the media, on TV, in the movies, they're beautiful, they're mm-hmm. strong, they're slim, and they're healthy.
Well, I guess you know the question arises, why in such a wealthy country haven't we provided this kind of insurance across the board for our citizens where every other country in the world, every other industrial country in the world has?
Well, you know, I think that there's so many levels of answers to that. The easiest answer that I could give on a radio show where people are listening with one ear while they're driving to and from work is that our healthcare system in the United States is a for-profit system. And the various people who make profits in the for-profit system, the insurance companies, traditionally, the physicians, members of the American Medical Association, were opposed to having a not-for-profit system, were opposed to having a universal system, because they're doing very well with this for-profit system. You know, the kind of sure. universal health coverage that would benefit all Americans, that would emphasize preventative care and education for healthy living and proper management of chronic health conditions rather than allowing them to fester and turn into major emergencies. Those are not big profit activities.
Well, they devised the slogan socialized medicine decades ago in order to frighten people off of the idea like somehow that would be akin to communism or socialism, our opponents in the Cold War at the time. That's all gone. What arguments do they use now? I mean, the best argument is there's no money here for a national health program. Now it's being spent on other things.
Well,
but
Yeah. I mean, that's a really interesting question because you know, the word socialized medicine gets thrown around, or it used to get thrown around, but no one talked about socialized school systems, and we do have a public school system.
Right.
So, you know, we do have a model in our country for the government taking the responsibility for basic human services for all of its citizens.
We do have a socialized fire department system and a socialized postal system, right?
You know what else we have? We do have a socialized medical system. I don't want to say socialized. We do have a National Health Service. Do you know what it's called?
Medicaid.
Nope.
What?
It's called the Veterans Administration.
Okay, there you go. Tell us about that and how that fits into that definition.
Well, it's the best healthcare system in the country. You know, I've interviewed a number of physicians who work in the VA system and who work in, you know, wonderful private, you know, world-class hospitals in the Boston area and the medical district in Boston. They tell me that they can be better physicians at the VA because they're not spending their time fighting with insurance companies over, I want to give my patient this medicine, but it's not on your list because this one's too expensive and you want me to give them that one. And yes, my patient really does need an MRI and not just an X-ray. At the VA hospital, at the VA clinics, they can give their patients the care that their patients need, that they as physicians see as appropriate. So we do have the skeleton of a national health service in this country.
Well, one of the things that at least we're told that people fear, we're mostly told by politicians that oppose any universal health care system, is that it's bureaucratic, that there's lines, that it's underfunded, that you got to wait 6 months for elective surgery, and then mostly it's just another bureaucratic government nightmare that will cost the taxpayers way more than we could ever get back in benefits.
Yeah, I find that kind of incomprehensible because right now the United States has just about the highest per capita health care spending in the world, but we don't have the best health in the world. We're way at the back of the pack of the industrialized, European, modern, you know, fairly affluent countries. So what we're doing right now is real expensive and not real effective. At this time, in this era of private medicine, one-third of our medical costs go to administrative costs. It's hard to believe that that would increase if we had a government-guaranteed system. But I think what's really important to emphasize is that a government-sponsored guarantee of universal coverage does not mean that the doctor tells you what doctor to go to.
Mm-hmm.
I lived in Israel for 20 years. Israel has universal health coverage. I chose my plan. I chose my doctor. I chose the hospital my son had surgery in. I had free choice. I think I had more choice there than I have here, because here I am limited to doctors who are in the plan that my husband's employer happened to choose for me.
Actually, from everything I've read, the only health programs in other countries that do have problems is because they're underfunded.
That's right. They're underfunded. And in Canada, and this is not my area of expertise, but Canada has limited the number of physicians. And that's why there can be long waits to see a physician. So in the United States as well, in many parts of our country, you can't see a physician at all. If you live in many rural areas, you might have to travel a couple hundred miles to a big city. There might be one doctor in, you know, some of the smaller towns, especially in the South. That one doctor might be somebody who trained in South Asia, and the United States government has not permitted this physician to practice anywhere except for in an underserved area in the United States.
Hmm.
So, you know, you're not going to have a lot of choice in that situation either in terms of the doctor that you go to. But I think a lot of the weight in Canada has to do with not having enough physicians and underfunding. Now, the other word that Americans hear and get scared about is the word rationing.
Sure.
We're told there's going to be rationing. And what I would say in response to that is we have rationing now. Not every American gets all of the health care that they want or that they need, but our rationing is done in a completely unsystematic, irrational, unfair way. If you live in a part of the country that has a lot of doctors, you can get to the doctor. If you live in a part of the country that's underserved, you can't get to the doctor. If you have money, you can get treatment. You don't have money, you can't get treatment. We have a situation in our country right now where people who are wealthy, yes, they can get their elective surgery with no wait, but people who are poor and don't have health insurance might not be able to get treatment for cancer. I interviewed people sitting at home dying of cancer who could not get access to oncology treatment. I think that in countries where there is some kind of government oversight of the healthcare system, the rationing is done in a more sensible, a more egalitarian, a more rational way. So, you know, perhaps it's not terrible to wait for a month for elective surgery if the flip side of the coin is that your neighbor down the street or your fellow American in another state can get treatment for cancer.
My guest is Susan Starr Sarada on the Peter Werby Show. The book is Uninsured in America, Life and Death in the Land of Opportunity. It's published by the University of California Press. Now, I know this isn't going to shock you, but as a white middle-class male, I would say, boy, this health system and insured, and at some times, even when I've worked through my union, I've actually had my union insurance pick up the copay. So I would say, you know, if it was just me and I didn't read books like Uninsured in America, I'd say, man, this is the greatest health system in the world. I hardly have to pay anything.
Mm-hmm.
So me, who I just define myself, middle class, male, white, does that definition come into play?
I think that it does, in that you certainly are more likely to have health insurance than somebody who is not white and someone who is not middle class.
And male?
The numbers are the same. Men and women are insured in just about equal numbers, but when you look at how it breaks down, more women than men are covered by Medicaid. It means they're very poor.
Mm-hmm.
The income threshold for Medicaid is very, very low in this country. So if you take away Medicaid coverage that more women than men have, you see slightly more men who are insured. But there's another statistic that's hidden from view in the charts we usually see in the paper, which is that far more men than women have their own health insurance through their own place of employment, whereas far more women are covered as dependents on their husband's policies, which means that if their husband passes away, if they're divorced, I interviewed one woman in Illinois, as she told me, her husband dumped her for a younger model. She lost her health insurance.
Wow.
So I think that the gender thing comes in. But what I would tell you as a middle-class white man, don't you have children?
No. No, I don't have
a clue. Well, you know, maybe you will at some point.
I don't think so. I hope not. we'd be looking at some miracles of science, but go ahead.
Okay, well, many middle-class white men in this country, amazing as it seems, do have children, and many of their children go to school, where they sit in classrooms with other children. If the children they sit with don't have health insurance because their parents do not have health insurance through their jobs for various financial reasons, they're going to be sitting in a classroom often with kids who are sick, who should be taking antibiotics, who are not, and who are sneezing and spreading their germs around the classroom. I'm middle class and I'm white. I'm not male. I'm female, as the listeners can hear from my voice. I have two sons who are in college right now. I'm quaking in my boots. What is going to happen when they graduate? They won't be covered under my husband's dependent coverage anymore. There are almost no jobs available today for recent college graduates, jobs that come with health benefits. In doing this project, this is really a very interesting story. I recorded the interviews that I conducted with uninsured men and women around the country, and Harvard sent the interviews to the clerical pool to be transcribed. What I did not know is that Harvard outsources this work. I started getting emails from the typists who were transcribing the interview saying, wow, this was really interesting to read. You know, the story that I was just typing up today was somebody really poor who lives in the backwoods of Mississippi. But, you know, I went to Harvard. I stayed here in Cambridge. I don't have health insurance. Do you want to interview me?
Boy. You, Susan Sarad, are the research director of a prestigious project at Harvard University, which means you have to come at these research projects with objectivity. Yet, when you start interviewing, when you're not just looking at statistics, when you're not just reading research, when you're talking to live human beings, emotions must rise to the surface. I mean, when I asked earlier about how you felt, I mean, I feel embarrassed. I've told this story before when we've talked about this, how I went into pick up some meds for myself. I had to pay a $10 copay, knowing my union would pick up the $10. Behind me, and I don't know why I was staying there, where there was this very small in stature elderly couple, and I heard them, and they said, that'll be $376, and they started, and every time, I mean, every time I relate this, I can feel tears welling up in my eyes, and they started counting out fives and ones and stuff like that. So, and I was just, this range between embarrassment and rage and pity, and, I mean, what, I assume emotions came up in you as well.
Oh, yes, and, you know, I think for me, you know, part of the delight in having my job based in a religion department and not in a statistics department is that I do get to share people's experiences and maybe sometimes get to understand a little bit about the ways that they suffer and what they have to go through, and know that sometimes I'm offering people comfort just by listening to their stories and by sharing their stories on radio shows like this one. There were certainly interviews that I left and I went outside and I just started kicking my foot against the curb. I was so angry. I interviewed a 22-year-old woman in southern Illinois. She is an African-American woman. Her father is in the military. She had health coverage while she was a child and then while she was a student. First person in her family, in her community to go to college. She went to college at in southern Illinois in the Champaign-Urbana area, studied early childhood education. She had an associate's degree, went for a 2-year program. Now, she has diabetes. She has juvenile diabetes. She's very slim. It's not a lifestyle issue. She was born with diabetes that had been managed properly her whole life. Anyway, she graduated her program in college, went to get a job in early childhood education, found that the local preschools were only hiring part-time employees because they didn't want to give out health insurance. So she was working part-time at a preschool and part-time at Walgreens with no health insurance, and she was not managing her diabetes anymore. She knew perfectly well what she was supposed to be doing. She knew how to manage her diabetes. She'd been doing it her whole life. She finally went to the manager at the pharmacy at Walgreens and said, you know, I'm trained in early childhood education. That's my passion. I'm willing to quit that job and come here full time if I can have health insurance. And he said, sorry, we're going to keep you at under 30 hours a week. We're not giving benefits either. She then went to the public aid office and said, I'm not asking for charity. I'm not asking for welfare. I just need help to get my diabetic supplies. And you know what they said to her?
What?
They said, get pregnant. You'll get Medicaid.
Oh, man.
And she said to me, tears were just like jumping out of her eyes. She said, the girls that I grew up with, they got pregnant in high school. It's wrecked their lives. I didn't do that. I went to college, and now someone